It's time for Twig This Week in Google. We're going to talk about, of course, AI and that weird statement from a bunch of AI scientists and important people saying, we've got to avoid a mass extinction event. What? We'll also... Weird, right? We'll also talk a little bit about Amazon and all the things they're discontinuing, including the celebrity voices I paid for. And then, finally, NVIDIA and TPUs, CPUs, GPUs, and NPUs. What's the difference? We talk chips and more next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week at Google, episode 718, recorded Wednesday, May 31st, 2023. Clean as a whistle. This episode of This Week at Google is brought to you by HPE GreenLake, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, who can help you consolidate and manage all your data in one flexible edge-to-cloud platform to scale and innovate. Learn more at cdw.com/HPE. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from everybody but Google, Twitter, Meta, Facebook, Google.
Neil's hair.
My hair. We were doing my hair earlier. Stacey Higginbotham is here. Hello, Stacey. Missed Hello. You last week. Stacey on IoT.com. Also, Mr. Ant Pruitt missed you last week.
Yeah.
Hands-on photography, twit.tv/hop.
Yep.
Good to see you.
Sir.
You had the week off? Or no, you were a little under the weather.
I was sick.
Yeah, sorry. Well, you're feeling better, though.
I feel much better now.
I think it's from doing too many pull-ups, personally.
No, never, no? never.
Okay.
I'll actually make that part of my pick of the week discussion.
Oh, good. All right, good. All right, we'll save it for then. Also with us, the Leonard Tow Professor for the Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Did we stop the singing?
Benito has a day off. John hasn't figured out how to push the buttons.
Oh, okay. Got it.
There's the button.
We feel better now.
So why have the AI scientists now doubled down with a 22-word press release? It's not even, it doesn't explain it or anything. It's just a statement released by leading names in AI. It's basically this. I can read it to you. It won't take long. Okay. Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI. Wait a minute. Slow down. What did you say? Extinction?
What the heck does that mean?
What? Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority. And then they add, I think somebody said, hey, you guys, there's other issues too. Oh, alongside other societal scale risks like pandemics and nuclear war. I think, honestly, if you're talking extinction event, most scientists agree global warming is the next extinction event. And maybe an asteroid. AI, signed by Jeffrey Hinton, the Google guy who retired.
Left, right?
Yeah. Professor of computer science at the University of Montreal, Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI.
Because he wouldn't sign the moratorium because he has to keep working.
So, that's what's weird. These are people who did not sign the moratorium letter in some cases. Martin Hellman from Stanford. It's not as long a list. Bill McKibben, he's the guy who wrote about the end of the world in the New Yorker.
He's the climate change.
Climate
change end of the world.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So there's nothing
Lawrence
really controversial.
Tribe from Harvard. I like him.
Oh, it's controversial to say
Peter Norvig. I trust him.
Destroy mankind. I mean, what bigger BSD can you imagine?
Goodfellow, who's a Google DeepMind principal scientist. I mean, this is a who's
Where's
who.
Where's the money? Where's the money?
Lex Friedman, the guy who does the podcast.
Oh, he's just ridiculous.
The guy who does the podcast. My goodness.
Well, in that case.
My goodness. We should listen to him.
So Dustin Moskovitz, who was one of the founders of Facebook. He's now at Asana. Well,
yeah, again, yeah.
Bruce Schneier. I love Bruce Schneier, security guru. Maybe we should get Bruce Schneier on to explain why
you need Emily Bender on.
Okay.
Emily Bender.
Not a signatory, obviously, right?
Well, exactly. She's not, because she has sanity.
Okay.
She is the University of Washington computational linguist who says enough, boys, enough. You got problems. The problems are present tense. Deal with them now. All this is so much chest thumping.
Well, it's it is marketing, but you know, a statement, it's not offensive. It's just silly.
But are they getting anything out of this 20 word? Well,
is the real cynic in me, but the cynic in me says people like Sam Altman are, because it so overstates what's going on with AI. It makes you think, wow,
Microsoft says we got to rush. We got to install this stuff. Oh my God. It's huge. It's powerful.
I think they're giving a lot more credit. If it's just spicy autocorrect, it ain't going to wipe out mankind off the face of the earth.
Right.
So this is. I'm being very cynical by saying this, but it does promote the notion that this AI is really more significant than I and many others think it is.
I agree.
And I think the other thing they got out of it is regulatory capture, is that they're, you know, if you watch Altman on Congress, it's let us help design how to regulate us and cut out everybody else.
But this is going to scare Chris Anderson of TED Talks, Grimes, the musician and artist.
Well, then that's it. Forget the podcast.
Asa Raskin. I mean, there are people I respect.
Oh, Tristan Harris, of course, always.
But there are people I respect on here, as well as people I don't.
Well, and if someone sent you that statement and was like, hey, Leo, look, AI is a big deal. We need Congress to regulate it. Can you sign this statement? I mean, my God, you're going to sign it. These things come from your friends.
Well, it's also the case that you're not.
I'm not going to sign it.
Well, but no, what are you saying? You're not saying that there is a risk of extinction from AI. Just that if there were one, you should be. You shouldn't do it.
There's basically like, look, AI has the potential to be like really problematic, and you know, maybe we should consider that.
But so does the
along
internet.
With other big problems.
But so does social media. All of that has
you could
potential
replace,
to be
I know.
Really problematic.
I know, that's why they signed it.
You know,
that's what I'm saying.
You could safely replace the word AI or the letters AI in here with any number of things. Mitigating the risk of extinction from social media should be a global priority.
Alcohol.
Chipotle. You could put anything in there.
Hey.
He didn't say Taco Bell.
It wouldn't be wrong.
You start diamond on Cacio e Pepe. You're in trouble.
Mitigating the risk of extinction from Cacio e Pepe should be a global priority. You can't say, well, you're right. I mean, global priority is a little higher.
Right.
But
especially for Cacio e Pepe.
So I guess the real question.
If it's microwaved, huh, Stacey? That's a global threat.
The real question I have for all you three is... Is there a risk of extinction from AI?
No.
Is there, Jeff? Is there any way you could say there's?
I've been looking, Leo, for any scenario that takes me through how we go extinct. And honest to God, the only thing I have found thus far is Max Tegmark. I think it was Max Tegmark, MIT, theorizing that the AI could at some point decide to cut off oxygen so that it wouldn't rust the machines.
No, but you don't.
I can't find any scenario.
Humans
that
don't
makes
give
any sense.
First of all, you can't cut off the oxygen to the earth. So,
well, that's why this is so stupid.
I mean, you could not open the pod bay doors, and then Dave's going to be stuck in space. But unless you give AI's agency, maybe that's what they're saying, is just don't let them give them the nuclear codes.
The only thing I can think of like with the food supply chain. And
but we're not giving them control of the food supply.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah.
Nor
Stacey didn't answer.
Stacey, yes or no? Are they a threat to her?
I think the biggest threat would be sowing discord via deepfakes and like leading to some sort of war/global catastrophe.
Oh, I agree.
And I think that's actually a viable thing.
We're already there. We don't need AI
we're
to
not,
do that.
No, but Alex Stamos.
All the way there.
Alex Stamos, who's the leader of the Internet Observatory at Stanford, this is what they watch for is disinformation, says that there will likely be an AI-driven avalanche of disinformation and misinformation leading up to the 2024 presidential election.
Again, we've got plenty of that already.
I think it's going to get worse. And I think we're going to see, I don't think it's like a Bay of Pigs situation. I think what's going to happen is we're going to have much more, what's it called? Cranky people with weapons during our elections process. Yeah, disrupting
more,
things.
And, yes. I'm like, more worried about that. Not AI.
That's not AI.
Well, no, you're going to rile those people up with non-truths using existing.
Oh, but they're already there. All right, I know they're there, but... Sorry, go ahead.
I was like, I know they're already there, but look at what's happening with, like, that one lady who went into the Target and saw the swimsuit was laying around in the kids.
It's giving them power.
That led to an escalation that was almost ridiculous if you think about how that got there.
So I've been saying that about Twitter since 2016, and I was right, by the way.
Yeah.
But I've been saying that. I said we have, you can go back and look, we've weaponized social media. Social media, which was this great thing, the bad guys were able to weaponize Russian.
And these are bigger bullets.
Yeah.
And more compelling bullets. So I think, and then
at the time,
when you have enough of them.
People said, well, you're not going to ban social media because of that, are you? Would you say ban AI because of that?
No, I would not say ban AI because of that. But I do think we need to understand. Well, I don't. That's a good question. Like, I'm like, we need to understand how these things propagate, how we can stop them from propagate. I mean, maybe stopping them isn't the right. How to defuse the situation?
Here's a scenario, Stacey.
Just guardrails.
This is so. I'm going to go the opposite way. That there's so much junk out there that no one believes anything, and everyone becomes cynical and critical again, and we're actually better off.
That, by the way,
so you and I will do that, but then there's plenty of people who are just, they've got itchy trigger fingers, and they're
just,
aren't those
people
really
the problem, not AI or social media? I mean, this is what I was told. This is what I was told when I said social media is the problem, is then you have to educate the electorate, you have to teach people critical thinking. Mm-hmm. I was told the solution isn't doing something to social media. That's just the solution is to fix people.
I agree.
Now, it didn't work so well. And so I understand.
Well, I'm listening to Jeff Charlotte's book Undertow right now. And Jeff's a really good academic and journalist. And the scariest thing in the book by far to me is this silliness you're about to hear, is that people argued that the really rabid Trump followers argue that everything in his tweets is purposeful. Every capital letter, every capitalization
QAnon
has meaning.
Yeah.
And they add up the numbers from the capital letters for secret messages. Right. Yeah. It's QAnon.
Those are Taylor Swift fans.
Well, it's human, isn't it? It's a very human thing.
Yeah.
When I was a DJ, the craziest people, you know, you'd always, anytime you're in the public eye, a certain percentage of the population.
Oh, give them a phone. Yeah.
So there were lots of people who thought, oh, you're playing that song for me. Because our brain is very able of making these connections. And the person would say, oh, yeah, no, you're sending me a message. I know you are. That's a very common form of mental illness, by the way, that anybody who's been in radio or TV knows. And 50 years ago, a guy came into the KGO radio station in San Francisco. I know you remember this, Jeff, and shot the place up because he said, you're broadcasting into my
house. I had somebody next to me.
Wasn't that a George Clooney movie?
Maybe. So you had a lady, Cosmic Lady, call you?
Cosmic Lady, she would call, and she discovered that my answering machine, because I was one of the few ones in the Examiner, that she could leave an hour-long message.
Mm. And so she did.
Oh, she did. Oh, she did. I found the solution here. Felix Simon on Twitter. The one thing I'm gonna get behind is this. Please consider signing my open letter for a moratorium on AI open letters. That's what I
think. Good call.
Here's what the information writes, Martin Pierce. Well,
you could afford to read it.
Yeah, I could pay for this. Well, that's one way to get attention.
Yeah, exactly.
The question is, why are very people responsible for AI's development suggesting it should be a priority to stop the new technology from killing off every human? Aren't they the best people to ensure that doesn't happen? Yes and no, he goes on to write. AI scientists want government's help.
That goes back to that regulation capture that, okay, all right.
Yeah.
It's also part of this whole long-termism crap and accelerationism. Let's get there as fast as we can to prove how big we are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crazy stuff going on. And again, the academics who are actually studying this stuff, the authors of the Stochastic Parents paper, How often do you see them quoted anywhere?
Yeah.
They're the ones who actually worry about the present case dangers. They warn of them. They say there are present case dangers. But that all gets that's shoved under the rug because we're going to talk about things that are just supposedly just going to destroy mankind.
It's Pierce ridiculous. Goes on to write, cynics will say we shouldn't read too much. This is me, by the way. We shouldn't read too much into this statement. Scientists are essentially virtue signaling, preempting yes. political calls for regulation Nailed by taking it. The lead in that campaign.
Nailed it.
Themselves. An alternative cynical view, you can choose this one if you wish, is that existing AI firms are simply pushing for regulation to make life difficult for future entrants. That's regulatory capture.
Yeah.
Either way, those involved with today's statements are taking a big risk because remember there's this thing called Congress. And
but Congress can't do anything. A, B, they're going to be part of this because Sam Altman learned from Mark Zuckerberg and has the charm tour. And C, they're not going for revenue. They're going for investment.
Well, Pierce says the only logical response that Congress might come up with is to ban AI or regulate it so tightly that even firms already in the business suffer.
Sam Altman said, license us and give me a license.
Yeah, give me the license. That's surely not what these scientists are looking for. But what do they want? This is a good line from Martin Pierce. Perhaps instead of issuing a single sentence statement meant to freak everyone out, AI scientists should use their considerable skills to figure out a solution to the problem they have wrought. But I don't think we even know what the problem is.
No, exactly.
Let's be fair.
It's not a single
is there
problem,
any,
but there are some several concerns, not necessarily problems, but concerns.
Is there any reason to say that, maybe we should be looking more closely at the threat of AI? I mean, we talked about disinformation. That's real.
We know it causes disinformation. We know that people, because we're all lazy, tend to rely on things that make our lives easier without checking it. So we know there's a danger with hallucinations or whatnot. So they're over reliance on AI, over trust in AI, which is ironic given the disinformation. We know that it can be used to scale propaganda. We know that it can be used to, we know that people trust what they see and trust visual mediums pretty highly. So that's a weakness we have that can be taken by that.
Yeah, we have to teach people not to trust photos.
I don't think that's possible.
Not to try. I just saw a deep fake thing where you could take a single picture, a still picture of anyone's head, put it on top of somebody else's moving body, and it makes a video that's in this. It's very impressive. And even if this is just a parlor trick, this will be something that will happen. Yeah, right?
Dare I return to resolve now? Dare I say this is exactly what happened with print? Nobody trusted what came off the printing press, and then we had to invent institutions to imbue trust and faith, like publishers and editors and libraries and so on. We don't have those institutions now. We're going to have to reinvent them because those old institutions ain't going to work. But yeah, I think people will become grossly mistrustful of much of what they see. And that's fine. Look at the surveys you see about social media. People say, I mistrust most of what I see on social media. Good.
But they still are easily influenced by it. What's hard.
I've seen the other thing is too, on social media that people are, they trust just as much what's put out there because they saw it on Facebook or saw it on Twitter from a so-called trusted source. I've seen both sides.
And you're going to see people lose their jobs because of this. And then that's going to create a layer of societal unrest that we already have based on income inequality. So that is another area where that's a second layer effect, but it's still a very real one.
There's still cab drivers. That still hasn't happened yet. When we've gone through this before, yes, we went through looms and threshers.
I don't think it's going to be quite to that level. I think I've already talked to companies that are hiring one or two fewer software developers because there's greater efficiencies in thanks to AI.
And so that's fine. That's a good business decision, right?
Yeah.
The point is there's going to be trickles. These are small effects individually, but in aggregate, you've got to think, okay, if you can cut down by the workforce in certain industries by 20 or 30% because it makes sense, that's a big change.
We may what happens in these cases, Stacey, we end up creating new jobs too at the same time.
We very well could. We very well could, and I hope we do, but there's also a lack of people that are being trained for those new jobs. And what about people that are 55?
Isn't it the case, though, that we could go through this very similar exercise with any kind of massive world-changing technology? If you said the smartphone instead of AI,
and
people would lose jobs.
You
know, photographers have lost all their value. Operators are gone.
I think new technology.
Phone books are gone.
Really, the big
advertising is down.
The big world-changing technologies have these kinds of massive impacts.
But they do.
Should we? But we don't want to. We don't want stasis. We don't want the world to stop evolving.
No, but we do
innovating.
Need to think about. I mean, think about how right now the economy feels precarious for so many people. And one of those is a function of technology and runaway capitalism. But if you think about like the gig economy, and we've talked about this, that creates a lot less economic certainty for people. We see people already struggling for things like buying a house. You could argue that that's a result of technology in the sense that Airbnb has bought up, you know, real estate in cities and caused, I mean, like,
right.
These are very real effects that are actually like we could be like. Whoa.
Oh, I'm not saying they're not, but I'm just saying that it always.
But how much
happen.
do you or how wise are we to be able to understand those effects fully and control them?
Jeff, have you ever seen?
Well, we can't.
Have you ever seen Jeff the Pessimist's Archive?
Such oh, I love cool that guy. I met him in my office 2 weeks ago. He's great.
So such this cool somebody brought this up on Twit on Sunday, and I thought, oh, Jeff Jarvis would love this. So at the bottom is a timeline of technological.
Pandemics.
Innovations like the telegraph, the telephone, the camera, and then a collection of clippings from that era talking about the hazards of, you know, these new technologies. And it's a very similar conversation.
Yeah.
The bicycle, you know.
Well, that's the big one. And that's the great one because Tristan Harris in his anti-social media film said, nobody freaked out about the bicycle. Well, indeed, there was huge.
On bicycle fright. What the medical record says of this common phenomenon, it may attack any rider. The remedy is suggested is to avoid looking at the dreaded object. The rider should never watch the wheel or the pedals. So moral panic is nothing new. I guess you've known that all along, Jeff. Elevators.
That's chapter 4 of the next book.
Yeah, elevators. All of the things that elevator sickness. Cases of elevator sickness are on the rise, said Dr. E.C. Knowlton of Chicago. When physicians first began to claim there was such a thing as elevator sickness, their statements were usually discredited. But it is now becoming well-defined. Its effects are found in an increased number of cases of brain fever and disordered nervous systems. Everyone has felt a sense of emptiness in their heads, a sensation as if they were falling when riding rapidly in an elevator, especially if it's going down. This is from the Cincinnati
were elevators
Inquirer.
Invented?
These articles are from the turn of the century. This is 1894.
Okay, so before like airplanes are riding real fast and cars downhill. Yeah.
There's an amazing book, The 4 Reasons to Turn Off TV. This was very similar, just to get rid of TV. Do I have it here? Somewhere around here I do. And one of the reasons was that the artificial light was going to be terrible. And his whole book.
Oh, yeah. My mom used to say that. Brains. Yeah. Turn on a light in the room because you're going to go blind.
Yeah, I used to hear that.
Which was a PR thing from the light electrical industry.
Yeah. Children's addiction to TV presents serious problems. This is from the Valley Times, 1957. First of 4 articles gives the remarks of psychoanalyst Dr. Isidore Zifferstein, made to a Valley audience recently, reported in the Valley Times. But I mean, I can go on and on. This is Gerrymander,
who was the author of 4 Arguments for the Elimination of Television.
Yeah.
Television literally enters inside human beings. Listen, the language is so much like social media, right? Inside our homes, our minds, our bodies, making possible the reordering of human processes from inside.
How about jazz? Yes. From the 20s, jazz blamed for the delinquency of girls today. So we can stipulate that there is often a certain amount of moral panic that goes along with
the other
new technology. But isn't there a kernel of truth in this or no?
There's concern. Stacey's right. There's concerns. We've got to deal with those. But the present tense concerns, That's what Emily Bender argues. By talking about this destroying mankind dinosaur moment stuff, they're distracting from current issues around privacy, around disinformation, around veracity and truth. That's
Can
the kind of
I
stuff
also I see point out
would,
that
you would well, normally say is a should be a primary concern.
Well, this statement and previous statements from AI scientists has garnered a lot of news, print, and so forth. We are facing down the barrel of a climate apocalypse.
Yes.
That we're doing nothing about. That's going to happen in 50 or 60 years.
Yep.
And I mean, I guess we just are in denial about it. I mean, that's a mass extinction event. I don't understand why we're so worried about this purely hypothetical. It's like Eliza is going to kill you when we are literally looking at something horrible that no one wants to talk about.
Fascism with nuclear weapons. Take that.
It's because we can't solve any of these, but this is one you can wring your... It's
you can
new,
wrap your head around.
I was going to say you can wring your hands over. Climate change is not something we can do anything about.
It is. It's not quite too late, but it is going to be if we don't.
Take steps for the future.
As an individual... There is very little you as an individual can do. You can call your Congress critter.
That's true of anything in politics, right?
Well, I know, but this is where, I mean, so sure, there is an element of, oh, look at the AI while we're going to be burning up. But
I don't watch a lot of linear television right now because it's not football season, but we have all of these.
Sorry, Ed.
We have all of this mainstream news talking about how horrible "quote unquote" AI is. Why isn't there anything out there in linear television and mainstream that says, "Hey, let's have some common sense about this"? It's always on podcasts like ours where I hear the common sense mentioned about AI. Why isn't there a push for the regular
common sense on podcasts?
Why isn't there a push on, you know, on NBC, ABC, whatever?
Because it doesn't. Because everything we accuse social media of doing, clickbait, needing attention, making money from engaging people and exciting them, that was invented by media. That's what they do. Yeah. I'm ashamed of my entire life and career because that's what I've been part of.
Yeah. Also, there's not a lot of great imagery. I mean, I know we could create some awesome imagery, but like the narrative in television, because you've got such a short time frame, it has to be a really well, it's got to be a big, easy to understand narrative, and it's got to have good visuals with it. And that's why linear TV is probably failing us on the AI front.
The reasonableness doesn't cut it on TV. But again,
because each week we name quoted, off a lot of advantages of AI, as well as all of the misinformation stuff out there. We do mention a lot of different advantages of it. And
I'm also one of the people saying calm down on that, by the way.
Yeah,
I think you said that last week on the show with Chris Messina. And I think I was thinking about it more, Leo. I think you're right that it's overdone. One of my favorite story of the week, and I sent you guys stuff over the weekend, was the lawyer who used ChatGPT.
That was a mess.
I'm waiting for every journalist and everybody else to do the same thing. It can't do fact. It's really bad. They're so overplaying its capability. Yeah, it sounds like us, and that's pretty darn amazing. And there's neat stuff we could do with it.
Yep.
But it's really limited what it could do. I think your point last week was exactly right, Leo.
Here's an article.
That's where it's everything thrown out.
To back it up by a guy named Rodney Brooks, who's a legendary roboticist. And once, one time head of the AI department at MIT, his actual title, he was the director of the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at MIT until 2007. He knows what he's talking about. His head, this is in the IEEE Spectrum Journal, just calm down about ChatGPT-4 already and stop confusing performance with competence. He's saying exactly this. He actually wrote a great article, and now it's amazing, 6 years ago, The 7 Deadly Sins of Predicting the Future of AI. Mm. And we are giving in to every one of those sins.
But you know what? That's what humans do. We always, performance always wins with us over competence. Think about it. That's just what we do.
Well, and I've said this before, I've been saying this for years, that people often think, in fact, I've been saying this for more than 25 years. People often think of a computer as a thinking machine. There's even a computer company called Thinking Machines. And it's really important to understand they don't. That's an anthropomorphism. Computers don't think. They basically are very simple calculating machines. They just do it so fast that it looks like we project onto them that they're actually thinking, but they're not. They're just performing calculations incredibly rapidly, right, even including AI. It's right. Not thinking. It isn't anything right, close but to those, thinking.
Those calculations, when performed super, I mean, you could argue that our brain is not thinking. It's just performing analysis of inputs really fast.
Okay.
I mean, the way our brain has developed, I'm just thinking.
This is an unsolved computer science question, which is, what is the difference between a rapid calculator and the human brain? Is the human brain just so sophisticatedly calculating that we don't see exactly how, but we could eventually?
Well, and think about like how dogs, like they're finding dogs that can detect like various diseases really early via scent.
Yeah.
So the same thing, I mean, we don't give dogs the same fonted, you know, well, actually we might, I don't know. They're not as cool as AI.
Unfortunately, the conversation always often goes down to, well, human has a soul and the machine doesn't. And I think that people reject that like, well, you can't, that's magical thinking. But I do think there may be something that we do in our brains that is very, very hard from a von Neumann machine to do. Yeah.
Well, okay, for a von Neumann machine. But I also would say, I would argue that we're no more special than any of these other things. The only reason we think we're so special is we're judging us, right? If you think about, if you think about animals, octopuses, the way they think, their whole separate, way their brain has developed to process their environments. I mean, what are we doing? We're actually really crappy at processing our environment, because otherwise we would have done something about the damage that we're causing in some ways.
We've been designed in such a way to respond to certain environmental stimulus, like a tiger in the brush, and not to other environmental stimulus. And so we don't long-term thinking and stuff. This is the realm of philosophy as much as it is science. Yeah. But I mean, there are some say,
we need more discussion of in this arena.
What distinguishes humans from animals is that we know we're going to die. An animal doesn't know it's going to die. We know we are.
We don't know that.
Dogs go off by themselves, and so do wolves.
Yeah. Well, they know when they're sick and they don't feel well, but humans go through life with the knowledge that they will eventually die. Animals don't have that.
We don't know that. Let's go out to the savannah and take a look.
Look at elephants. Those elephant funerals they have. I mean,
yeah, once they're sick and die, they know they're dead. But do they know that they're going to die?
Mourn the loss of their kin.
Yeah, because they're dead. But do they know that they're going to die?
You don't think that if they can mourn, they don't recognize that is...
I could be next?
Well, maybe. Yeah. All right. So we can't know that, I guess. then there are others. No, I'm just saying what people have said. Let's put it that way.
No, I know. Yeah.
There's others who have the opinion that it was... I mean, by the way, that's what some have given as the explanation of the Cambrian explosion. There was sudden realization that we could, in fact, die. I think Leonard Schlein said that in one of his books. There are those who say our sense of time, many scientists and maybe some philosophers who understand that there is no such thing as time. Time is what we think happens, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. That is our impressions. There was a really good interview that your buddy Lex Fridman did with Stephen Wolfram, in which Wolfram pointed out that what we think of as time is just our averaging of all the events that happened all at the same time. Mm-hmm. We overlay this sequentiality on it. It's very interesting. It's a physicist's point of view, not necessarily a philosopher's point of view, although. The point is, I do think there's something different from what a computer does. Now, I interviewed the guy who invented graffiti, Jeff Hawkins, who's also a neuroscientist, and his premise. He wrote a number of really interesting books on brain neuroscience. Is that the thing that distinguishes humans? Our rate of calculation is much slower than a computer, but we are massively parallel. And he said the mistake we're making is trying to take a von Neumann machine, which is much more sequential. And what we really need to do is build massively parallel machines. So he started a company, Numenta. You've heard of this, Stacey, I know, because I think we've talked about it, that was designed to create memory chips that worked more in parallel like our brain does. Not achieving success yet. But in any event, the point being, I think, and maybe you're right, maybe it's just a kind of a subjective and self-centered point of view. There is something different about the way humans think and machines think. And I don't think making a machine think faster or with more data is going to ever achieve whatever it is that we've got going on, consciousness. You could maybe argue.
What we're doing. So computers deal with exact information, unless we're talking about probabilistic computing, but let's pretend we're not, because that is a whole different realm of both chip design and programming. But in general, although AI is probabilities, we're teaching them to use exact calculations to.
Well, and quantum computing is in fact also not.
Okay. Quantum computing isn't real yet. We're not going to go there yet. Well, there is such a thing. I'm just talking about what's available to us.
Right. Okay. It's there. It's just not at scale. They're at scale.
Okay. Yes. I'm like, no, don't bring that in yet. Okay. So what we're good at is seeing things and making an intuitive leap and not being able to account for our work. What we're getting with AI and what makes us uncomfortable is we're actually allowing the AIs to make those, what we think of as intuitive leaps. They're making based on calculations on much of the data and making a probabilistic assumption. So in some ways they may be computing like us. I'm kind of thinking out loud on this. So, but we trust human intuition a lot sometimes, but then we also want, like, we value the data-driven aspects of a computer. So we might be having our issue is we've always thought of computers as like neutral sources of data, but now that they're making these probabilistic assumptions that mimic intuition, we're like, oh, this is scary. This could be a problem. And I don't know if that's really true.
I would submit
that we could just trust them as intuitive things.
What we're seeing and so far, and I think it's going to prove to be the case, is that by itself, whether it's a self-driving vehicle or ChatGPT writing a novel, they're not very good. In conjunction with human thinking, they're a very good partner.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I love the premise of that.
Yeah. And I think it's a better way to think of these as a way of augmenting human abilities. But leaving the human out of it almost always is disaster. I mean, you let a Tesla drive itself.
We can't be out of it because our data is what feeds it.
That's not sufficiently in it. I think.
But I agree with you. But I also think that, you know, one of the interesting things is that not that. I think what's interesting about AI is not that it produces good content, it produces bad content. And in that sense, it reflects our biases and our presumptions and our mistakes and foibles over time. And that's what's interesting about it. We're not doing that. We're thinking it's now a computer brain. It's going to produce perfect content. It ain't, because it's based on us.
Well, it's us. It produces a amalgam of what it gets from us. But it's not judging it. It's not thinking about it. It's not processing it. It's just statistically generating it. And I don't think that's particularly useful.
I watched a video of the chief scientist at OpenAI, who used to be, I forget his name suddenly. It's on the rundown. But it was to Microsoft. It was an hour long about how all this works. My favorite part of it, the only funny part of it, was he said that you can ask it to do things like give it a first break up your queries into pieces. Don't give it the monster query. And then he said, you can tell it, I want you to be smart. I want you to have 120 IQ. He said, don't tell it that you want it to have a 400 IQ, because then it'll get into all kinds of sci-fi crap.
Greg Crow Hartman was on Floss Weekly a couple of weeks ago, and I'm pretty sure you're quite a fan of his, being Mr. Linux kernel and all. But I remember him mentioning AI, and he wasn't really sold on it, and he said something along the lines of AI is just pattern matching.
Yeah, sort of. It is.
Yeah.
So that's essentially what it is. Yes. You know. And it has some value. So it's, Paul Theroux said, you know, Stephen King has a terrible time ending his novels, but probably with a little help from AI, he could come up with an end his novels.
Yeah.
I think Stephen would still have to write it.
Yeah.
But maybe the AI could come up with some solutions that Stephen hadn't thought of.
Have a partnership there.
I mean, I think that's useful. But I think AI always needs to be done in a context of a human.
Absolutely.
As an assistant.
Well, and I mean, how many people are actually not including, granted, yes, people, companies are doing like really crappy jobs with chatbots, but they were doing that before AI got good, right?
true.
So like if something really matters and if it's core to your product or core to your competency, I don't think we'll see AI without humans. And I think, I mean, like,
in which case,
I'm using,
so
yeah,
that answers two of our qualms, which is, okay, so for every AI, there's going to be a human. So don't worry about job loss, maybe job change, but humans.
Well, no,
are
there
not,
will still be job loss if you're going to take, well, you know, if I'm jobs, doing 40% less work. Yeah. Well, I mean,
but there still needs to be a human taking the output of the AI and massaging it or using it.
No, I think there'll be a human making sure the output of the AI fits with the standard.
Well, we'll see. My guess is, and this has been the way it is in full self-driving and other areas where AI has let us down, that you may be surprised by how much human input is needed going forward. So that's one. It also solves the problem of mass extinction. Unless the human is a evil genius intent on the destruction of mankind. Well,
that's a different
that
story.
That totally could happen.
But then is it the AI or the human that's the problem?
Well, it just, it makes us more scalable. Like if you think about it, makes our
that's a good
workloads.
Point. So you'd be a scalable like, evil genius. I think I see your right. point here. Yeah.
I mean, I can scale up and write more thanks to AI, right? I can have it generate ideas for me.
Does that put people out of work though? I mean,
well, not in my case because no. I'm ethical and I'm not venture backed. But if you're
okay, and so this a lot is of people at CNET are out of work or ended up getting fired because Red Ventures decided to use AI. But I'm not
how well did that work?
Yeah, I'm gonna say that didn't work out so well for Red.
Not
Ventures.
As well as Schwartz Esquire, the lawyer.
Right.
Yeah, but I think Schwartz under Esquire. Our current economic regime, if you can cut out costs and people are more expensive. Well, actually, AI is not as economical as we think it is right now. It's very expensive. And we don't really talk about that a lot.
Oh, that's another one.
Didn't Rubino bring that up about the
cost?
Well,
we talked about it on Sunday. Yeah, with Daniel Rubino. I brought it up too. I keep bringing it up. You know, this is not a cheap technology. Interesting. Part of it is not so expensive. The part that's expensive is creating the models. But actually, once you have a model, you can run queries against the model more cheaply.
That's still expensive. Well, it's still, I mean,
Sam Altman says it's 10 times more expensive than a Google search or a ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So it's still pricey. So,
but Bruce Schneier had a really good piece in Slate talking about where the action is going to be is in the small open source models.
For that reason, right?
Yeah, right.
By the way, Schneier is one of the people who
to control.
Schneier is one of the signatories to that statement. Which
I know.
I love Bruce. I have huge respect for him.
As do I.
Yeah.
Ask him why he did it.
Yeah,
I mean,
we got to get him on.
I'm betting.
Yeah.
But
remember
also get on Emily Bender. Get on Timnit Gebru. Get on Margaret Mitchell. Get on one of those
Jason,
folks from Stochastic
Jason, you write this all down for Tech News Weekly. Jason and Micah. Bruce Schneier versus Emily Bender by itself would be great, I think.
Must see TV.
Yeah, I think this is one area where I think we can do a good job, better job than mainstream media, because maybe we're a little more informed and a little more skeptical.
Yeah, and we have 3 hours.
And we have 3 freaking hours to fill.
We don't have to have 3 hours.
3?
I just want y'all to know. It could just be 2.
I didn't know it was 3. Good.
I'm going for 2 this week. You'll be glad to know, Stacey, which is why I am going to take a little break, a little teeny tiny timeout, so you can go get a waffle.
And I'm going to have a chip question for Stacey if I can.
And a chip
an
question.
AI chip question
yes.
for Stacey.
I think Ann has
Stacey's
one
doing.
Too, actually.
Look what
believe
Stacey's
it or not.
Doing.
What's Stacey doing?
Stacey.
My child brought me a lemon bar that they made, brought to their class.
Wow.
So, yeah, you take that ad break. I'm eating my lemon bar.
Take that ad break. I'm having lemons. Let's make Let's like make some lemonade out
of
Stacy's
lemons. Sour.
Our show today brought to you by HPE GreenLake, orchestrated by those great experts at CDW. The helpful people at CDW understand your organization needs simple management over its big data. But, you know, this is an interesting world we live in. Some people need their workloads on-prem for organizational requirements. If that's the case, it could be challenging, right, to organize and optimize your data. And that's where CDW can help your organization. By consolidating and managing all your data in one flexible, unified experience with the HPE GreenLake Edge to Cloud platform. The experience you get with HPE GreenLake is unique because no matter where your data applications live, you can free up energy and resources with automated processes and streamlined management. We all can use some more streamlining. I know I can. Not only that, HPE GreenLake creates a seamless cloud experience among multiple data environments thanks to the as-a-service model that meets your remote workforce on the edge. And with unrivaled scalability, you'll see an instant increase in capacity, allowing for greater flexibility and accelerated business growth. So your team can tackle bigger priorities like innovation. When you need to get more out of your technology, HPE makes data transformation possible. CDW makes it powerful. Learn more at cdw.com/HPE. We thank CDW so much for supporting this week in Google and all of our Twitch shows. CDW.com/HPE. Use that address so they know you saw it here. CDW.com/HPE. Do you want to do a chip story? Are you through with the lemon bar?
I want to ask Stacey a question. I want to explain if she's not too puckered up to talk.
I think she's in a lemon bar coma.
Sweet lemon bar? Or
she's in a lemon bar coma right now.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she's not.
She can't hear a word she's saying.
No, we can't even hear her.
Did we finish the ad?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Did you finish the lemon bar?
No, I started writing something.
Oh, are you a little ADD? Are you a little ADD? Just out of curiosity.
I am a lot ADD.
Who is it? Who here is not ADD?
It's always me.
Just you.
It's always me.
You're not ADD?
Everywhere I go.
Everybody else is ADD.
Everywhere I go.
And I just saw a study. It says it's the fluoride in the water.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on a well. I don't have fluoride.
Let me just have more so maybe I can be like
that. That's it, Leo. The AI is going to figure out a way to put too much fluoride in the water and we're all
dead.
That's
the extinction event.
Oh, okay.
There it is.
Nailed it.
All right, here's my dumb question for Stacey. Was it accidental that AI said, these graphic chips are good at this stuff that NVIDIA happened to make? Or NVIDIA is now the first $1 trillion company of AI because their chips are used in all of this stuff.
Right.
Those chips already existed before for graphics and games and things.
And then it was Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. Okay, so remember how Leo was talking about the humans are really great at parallel processing?
Uh-huh.
To do graphics, you have to be great at parallel processing. So graphics chips are different from like Intel's chips.
Uh-huh.
Because they do a bunch of jobs in parallel.
They do a chunk of data at once.
They do a lot of... So NVIDIA, and this is why back when I was at Fortune, I wanted to put Jensen on the cover of Fortune back in 2015.
Oh, you were right.
And they were like, too early.
Oh, you were
but
so right.
AI, the, yeah. the way that...
She's talking Jensen Huang, the founder of NVIDIA, who has gone from being the $200 man to being the $30 billion man. It's really a great story.
You should write to all those editors who stopped you and say,
I mean, Jensen
they already knew.
Really, yeah, they know. They blew it.
I know.
But
tell you.
So that's why graphics chips, remember like the seminal moment in computer vision was back in 2012 when it was actually Jeff Hinton. They did ImageNet, and they basically were able to prove out Jeff Hinton's theories about how quickly and how well a computer could name things, like recognize an image. Uh-huh. So they were able to do that thanks to graphics chips and their massively parallel processing. So it is not a secret, or it's not like...
No. I'm just... I guess what I'm trying to ask is this. It's they looked around and said, graphic chips already do that. If you were going to design chips from scratch to do what AI does now, would it look a lot like a graphics chip? Or was it just incredibly good timing to have really good graphics chips that then had other uses?
And I'm going to throw in a little extra on this one. What is the difference between a GPU and a NPU, or what Intel's calling a VPU? Thank you.
A neural processing, yeah, or a visual processing.
Yeah, these are the new AI chips in addition to GPUs.
Right, right, good.
I don't know what the difference between a GPU and
I'm glad you asked.
I'm guessing. And it depends on, so we build the algorithms for the silicon we have, right? And then we're like, it's kind of a market and egg where they're running in lockstep. So now we have things and we're like developing chips. So we're like, oh, okay. So you have to move. When a computer is doing a calculation, you have memory, right? You leave stuff in memory right next to, there's two levels of memory. There's on-chip memory, and then there's the memory like that used to be tape or other memory.
Disks.
Disks, or even it's not on the same chip. It's not right next door, right? So you got to go, if you've got a, so that memory is limited. So you can only store so much information, and the chip, if it's massively parallel, it can pull all of that in, and then it needs more. But that's like I/O that to get from, you got to go to the next building over to get your more of the data that you need to process and bring it over to the room that's next to the big processor, right?
Right.
Just think of a chip as a series of rooms. So you could design a chip with a bigger memory room that's right, that's accessible to your processor. There's also things like the way we do our algorithms. Like there's things like matrix multiplication. That type of math is really important. So you can build chips that are optimized for better matrix multiplication. But we're also developing new algorithms and new ways to do this all the time. So you actually might find something that's really effective, like from a either cost or from a power or performance perspective. And you might actually be like, I want to do this so much, and I'm Google, I'm going to build a whole new chip designed for this.
So this is Tensor? So
it could be Tensor, but it could be like if some genius at Intel or at Google decides they want to build a whole different type of algorithm, they might, if they decided it was the best algorithm for search, it would be economically viable for them to design a completely new chip just for that.
And this is what Microsoft has done with the NPUs, because they're basically FPGAs. They're programmable processors. Yeah. So you can optimize them for new workloads or new styles of calculation.
So, Stacey, when you pushed NVIDIA cover story, what was your pitch then?
My pitch was they are enabling AI evolution. They're one of the only contenders, because at the time Intel didn't have a great graphics option. AMD did, but NVIDIA was doing just so well at it that, and there was very little competition that wasn't a startup, that they were going to win for a long time to come.
Did you see these other uses for graphics processors on the horizon at that time?
You saw it starting. I mean, once that ImageNet competition happened in 2012. Yes. And I went to a couple, they called it NIPS. They used to, that's sexist, so they don't call it that now. I went to a couple of their shows and listened to like the researchers talk about the types of chips they wanted. So then I was trying to work with like all the, because all these startups were coming with new architectures.
So basically, I'm going to see if I can summarize this in a simple way.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I think I can do this in a sentence. So the way computers since time immemorial have been designed is something called the von Neumann architecture, which is basically a single instruction. A von Neumann machine has a processor, it has memory, it might have storage, and it's a single pipeline. It's like an assembly line for calculation. Very quickly, we realized, especially once graphics became popular, Intel did something called the MMX extensions. We realized, or SIMD extensions, that we should be able to operate, instead of on a single thing at a time, on a mass of a texture, for instance, in a graphics environment. In one instruction, operate on all of that data. So they created these more parallel forms of processing. And that's when the first graphics processors came along. You might probably remember the 3DFX Voodoo card. Mm-hmm. And these graphics processors were just basically glorified multiprocessor machines. All we've done is, and that's what NVIDIA actually, which bought, I think, bought 3DFX and incorporated their technology along with a lot of others, created these massively parallel processors. They're not von Neumann machines. Well, they are. They're just many, many, many von Neumann machines all working at once. And right. What it turns out, if you're doing a specific kind of thing, not graphics, but machine language training, large language models and GANs and things like that, you can specialize even further in these graphics chips into something that's designed for particularly artificial intelligence applications. Those are NPUs or TPUs or what Intel calls VPUs. Mm-hmm. They are basically GPUs that have been specialized for the kinds of calculations you do in machine learning. Is that accurate, Stacey? Is that a fair way of summarizing that?
That's much better.
No, Stacey, yours was really informative. All right.
No, and more. I used to have this.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say there's all these cool new things coming down the pipeline. Because one of the issues is when you have all of these parallel processing, you have to figure out how to tell everything how to work together and do the job.
Right.
And so you see like the rise of these fabrics inside, right?
Right.
And communicating what's going on and moving all that data around is becoming a bottleneck. So your next generation, like we're not there yet, but I'm really excited about like photonics on chip. I know you're excited about quantum, Leo.
Yep. And photonics too is a little closer, actually.
Yeah.
Both Microsoft and Apple have fabrics to support this kind of movement. What Apple's done is actually put the NPU on chip. They call it the machine. What do they call it? They have a name for it, a machine learning module or something like that. And so that's one way of doing it. That's perhaps even faster because it's integrated. Apple's making these giant chips that have everything, including RAM. On one.
Well, now what you're talking about is the rise of chiplets.
Right. And SoCs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically, I mean, we would call it a system on a chip, which is a bunch of chips, you know, on a big.
On one die.
Chunk of.
Yeah.
Die. Thank you. I was like, I had a big chunk of wafer. What do you call that?
Where does Tensor fit into this?
Google's
Tensor
brand
is a custom
name.
Designed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. For their neural processing.
Their version of this.
Yeah.
All right. One more question. I'm sorry, but this is, you know, Jeff Learns moment. Now put this into the discussion of neural networks. Is it just a whole bunch of massive processing going on in massive processing?
So a neural network, I mean, when we talk about AI, a lot of what we're talking about are neural networks, which is...
That's why I'm asking. Yeah.
It's, I mean, a neural network is just...
So this is where the computer scientists are saying, well, we know the brain is very, very parallel. So maybe that's how the best way to simulate learning in a machine is to do this highly parallel processing.
So it's parallel.
We're trying to duplicate neurons, right? That's the word neural.
Was capable of parallel. And now you want to do a whole bunch of parallels.
Well, and then Stacey brought up matrices, and that's really a better way of describing it. So parallel sounds like lanes that are going in the same direction.
Right.
These are all interconnected in a variety of ways. They're more like a grid.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it's much more flexible in the kinds of parallel processing. Look, Stacey is obviously more of an expert on this than I am, and I'm just trying to understand it in layman's terms. It's part of the computer revolution that's going on. It really is.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Stacey.
Well, and we have all these branches that we've tried, and what's really fun, I think, what's really fun is right now we're seeing, like, there's one way to train and run a model that's on these massive NVIDIA type cards, right? And y'all know I'm excited about TinyML, but there's a lot of research going into other places, like how do we shrink those models? And it's turning out that the way you build the models on the big machines are probably not the best way to build models that are going to run on the small machines, which means we're going. So I just sat through like 3 hours.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So like things like back propagation and pruning are really good ways to like.
This is what Google was talking about at Google I.O. was how we get these massive models into your phone. Right. I didn't realize it's different. You change the way you do the model.
Which is also part of the Bruce Schneier article is all the open source being able to use it on smaller machines of any sort and have a real impact.
Right.
What is considered small machine versus big machine? That's what I'm not
Yeah. Thinking. And the other thing you have to be real clear about when we're talking about this is there's the training, which is the building of the model, and then there's the inference for the running mm-hmm. of the model. So when you're talking about training, it's all in these big computers, but the cutting edge thinking that I'm listening to research on is actually, let's figure out how to train on these small computers. But when we train, we're going to actually run completely different types of algorithms and help establish weights and focus for those algorithms for tiny machines. What Google's talking about with their large language models like Gecko and Unicorn and Gemini, and I don't remember how they get from big to small, they have two. I think they talked about having two different models. And one is just shrinking it down to run inference on smaller and smaller machines. And small machines, most people, when they say small machines, they're talking about like a gateway, which is still running like a computer chip. And
I used to have a gateway computer.
Sorry, not that kind of gateway. Yeah.
With the cows.
So like any machine with an application processor that runs Linux. When I talk about things like TinyML, I'm talking about like running on a freaking sensor. So like TensorFlow.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of how small TensorFlow Lite can go. I don't think it's...
Well, it's in your phone, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and your phone is actually like when people talk about like running machine learning at the edge, that's usually where they're talking about. And it's freaking impressive. What I'm talking to people about is running machine learning on like a microprocessor, of like a microcontroller.
Because see, I wouldn't have assumed a smartphone is a small computer. I mean, other than the physical form.
I know, right?
But I would assume a smartphone is a bigger computer because of how all of the processing power it has, right?
The issue. Yeah, so what Bruce is talking about in this article and in general is because these models have been so big and require so much horsepower, that it's dominated by Google, Microsoft, Facebook, big companies with big capitalization
that and can big run data these big and big data. Machines. Mm-hmm.
And what Bruce is saying is there is a movement. And actually, ironically, it's Facebook's Llama, I guess you pronounce that, or Yama, that is opening the way to this. This was actually leaked out and now is being widely used by the open source community because now the idea is to take the power away from, or not at least to keep them from owning it entirely, Google and Facebook and Apple and Microsoft and Amazon, and let small developers work in this space. Because if you don't do that, then you just don't get innovation. You just get what Sam Altman clearly wants, which is to, you know, the big guys owning it.
Yeah.
And good luck trying to control that. If you want to try to stop AI because it's going to destroy everything, well, there's going to be a whole bunch of little factories going on.
Why it surprises me that Bruce signed that statement, to be honest with you, because
I agree. Well,
he's an advocate for
this. It's such a namby-pamby statement, though. Yeah, it's like, this could be a problem.
Of Earth? Yeah. That's not quite namby-pamby.
He said, Bruce writes, this isn't the first time companies have ignored the power of the open source community. Sun never understood Linux. Netscape never understood the Apache web server. Open source isn't very good at original innovations, but once an innovation is seen and picked up, the community can be a pretty overwhelming thing. The large companies may respond by trying, and this is what they're doing, to retrench and pulling their models back from the open source community, but it's too late. We have entered an era of large language model democratization. By showing that smaller models could be highly effective, enabling easy experimentation, diversifying control, and providing incentives that are not profit motivated, open source initiatives are moving us into a more dynamic and inclusive AI landscape. Maybe you should get Bruce on Floss.
Well, we can try.
That would be a really well. Mr. Bruce Searles, has been on our shows. Yeah, Bruce has been on our shows before. I'm sure Doc knows Bruce. This article is from Slate by Bruce Schneier and Jim Waldo. I bet you, Bruce would like to come on and talk about this because that's really important. You don't want. I mean, honestly, that's the threat. It's not to mass extinction of the human race, but it might be to extinction of small companies and individuals.
Or vice versa. This is where there's no moat. We talked about that 2 weeks ago, that there's no moat around the big guys because the little guys can do it. And it also goes back to the stochastic parrots, folks, once again, as many rivers do, where if you have smaller models with smaller data sets, that's more manageable in terms of being able to audit what they're doing, where you get your stuff, what's happening there. And so a small version of AI may be a really more interesting way to look at all of this.
Now, I wonder if you fast forward into the future, if you've got, like, because with open source, there's a liability issue, especially if you give these jobs that are more complicated. So there's a quality assurance kind of aspect to this that you could then build. I'm just picturing my, like, in the future world, and I'm like, oh man, I need a chatbot to answer my phone while I'm, you know, reporting or editing or something, right? And to evaluate if it's a good story. So who am I going to hire? Like, what company has the best chatbot for that to mimic my voice to see if a story is interesting and worth taking a note on or interrupting the call?
You know, you have Tesla doing full self-driving, but then a guy named George Hotz creating
No, they're not.
Pardon me?
They're not doing full self-driving.
Well, they're attempting. But then there's
I thought you were saying that it was real. Sorry, I was it's not.
Well, but this is the point, is a big company attempting to do this. And then there's this guy, George Hotz, who's created a little company that has an open source self-driving. You just put their phone in your window, self-driving car system.
Oh, God, it scares me.
Well, I think it's at least as good.
it's innovation, though.
And it's at least as good as full self-driving. George started Comma AI. He has left since, but George Hotz, iPhone hacker and Elon Musk antagonist.
Wow. That we like.
Yeah, that's what The Verge calls him. But yeah, he created this incredible. Yeah, there he is. That's George. Or Geo Hotz. He did this. He unlocked the iPhone at the age of 17. He was a hacker. Got in trouble with Sony for unlocking the PlayStation 3 a couple of years later. And Musk tried to hire him. Then he said, no, I'm not going to work for you, and I'm going to make a better autopilot than Tesla. Which, as far as I could tell, actually is true.
I respect that.
Yeah. So his new company will be called, I think, the Tiny Corporation. He says, under 1,000 lines, under 3 people, 3 times faster than PyTorch, which is the Python library for machine learning. For smaller models, there's so much left on the table. So that's why...
he's not just doing self-driving, he's doing the models.
He's doing the models. That's why you want this to be, shrunk down.
But in Europe, the European regulation that's coming out, is there's some discussion that it's going to ban open source versions.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
And in fact, it's going to... liability on every model that's created. Every action that anybody then does with it is going to go back to the source model maker.
And did they give a reason why they would want to ban the open source side of it?
Because they want to be able to control it.
They don't want an AI extinction event. But, so to circle all the way around, now think about what that statement really was, is this stuff scary. You can't let little guys do it because it's out of control. Yeah,
let us take care of it.
We know. I mean, I don't. Now I'm no longer thinking that's the cynical view. I think that's the accurate. That's the right view. Sad to say. All right, can we change the subject a little bit? You guys can vote if you want to go.
I wanted to ask Miss Stacey.
Oh, you had a good article. Let's pull that up.
NVIDIA. The headline is, the Spectrum X Ethernet switch offers lossless, quote, transmission via a new kind of congestion control, says NVIDIA. And when I saw that, the first question that came, well, two questions. Does this even matter? And number two, why does it matter if it really does matter?
By the way, I love it that NVIDIA names their chips after great female computer scientists of the ages. This is the Grace Hopper. Yep.
So this is the ZDNet article?
Yes.
The Spectrum X?
Jensen Huang showed off the first iteration of the Spectrum X, the Spectrum 4, with 100 billion transistors in a 90-millimeter square die. And this is
ridiculous. Bandwidth.
Oh, okay.
This is fabric, I think.
This is the fabric issue. Yeah. I was like, this is a routing. This is basically, you got to move that data real fast if you're talking about parallel processing that much stuff.
NVIDIA is very
awesome.
Smart. Yeah, they have pivoted. And so they were the gaming company, and then they saw the opportunity in self-driving vehicles. They do a lot of chips for cars.
The part runs at 500 watts, y'all.
That's a
little
high.
That is so much power.
It's for a networking operation.
This isn't, this is inside a supercomputer, basically. This is a switch using Ethernet, which is more capacity. This is where photonics would actually help, because if you had a photonic thing, you wouldn't have to move the, it would run as hot.
Yeah.
And it would be faster, and you wouldn't have to have such smarts in there. But that's cool.
Yeah, I think this is so Jensen gave his first in-person keynote in a long time a couple of days ago. In fact, I wish we'd covered it. We just kind of jammed up with keynotes.
Yeah.
But they're really firing on all cylinders. It's amazing.
I was almost at Computex.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, I decided not to go last minute, though.
I get an invitation every year from one company or another.
I get them.
Micah got one too.
And you
got one.
Computex.
I'm always like leery about going because I don't know. I don't want to take this free trip. Yeah. It's like a junket.
So I don't know. Computex was a sponsor on my show. I should mention that last month. Mm-hmm. They were a sponsor.
Well, that's a little different. Then they're a sponsor. That's different, I think.
No.
Yeah, but I still would have had to pay for my own trip.
There are a lot of companies that want to give us free trips. I always turn it down.
Miss Stacy.
Yeah, I never take a free trip.
Yeah.
He just said that, NVIDIA was, quote, a gaming company, but now they're sort of pivoting into the AI side of things. And it made me think about AMD. AMD has had its issues with its Ryzen performance here and there. But is there a way for them to get into the AI side of things at some point?
And they do have, they do have chips that are used in AI. Jensen or NVIDIA is not the only company. Like, people do use AMD chips for training and whatnot. They don't have as great of a marketing department. They don't have a CEO as charismatic in a black leather jacket. But I would note
she's a cool CEO, though.
Lisa Su? Oh, yeah. She's not. I've met both of them. You know when you meet Jensen, and right. He comes on real strong. And right. Lisa Su, you know that this is a really smart, sharp person who is going to, you don't want to mess with. You don't want to disappoint Lisa Su. But they're not the same from a marketing or storytelling perspective. But real fast, with this switch, I should note, what NVIDIA is doing is they're actually creating underlying hardware that is the full cloud product, right? So when he's talking about two data centers and creating an AI data center, NVIDIA is creating that AI data center. So if I'm Amazon, I'd be looking out at this and going,
no kidding.
What about my AWS? Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah.
So I just thought I'd share that with y'all because y'all would think that's nice.
Yeah, they unveiled a supercomputer platform, basically. In fact, at the end of the keynote, Jensen Huang says, it's too much. I know it's too much.
That's crazy.
Sales forecast for the current quarter, $4 billion above analyst estimates. That put NVIDIA into the trillion-dollar company club, which is a very small club. Good for them. I've been saying for some time that NVIDIA is very impressive because they are firing on all cylinders. It's gaming, crypto for a long time. I mean, but they were lucky because as crypto fell off the map, AI came on and replaced that market for them.
And they also, way back in 2008, when I went out and visited them, and they had, I called it a sexy processor. It was a mobile processor. They basically have been trying to push parallel Tegra gaming style processors.
Yeah,
it was
Tegra on the mobile devices. Yeah,
I have a Tegra in my NVIDIA Shield.
Yeah,
that thing is 6-7 years old, and it's as fast as a modern.
I forgot about Tegra.
Yeah,
but they've been pushing this style of computing since 2006. They're what do we got? We got the world's best hammer. We're going to put this hammer where everything needs a hammer.
Yeah. Right.
But they were right. And graphics, you don't bet against graphics. And on the phone, and then they were like, we're going to put it into laptops because that was the available computing infrastructure they had. They were like, corporate presentations are going to need better graphics processors. Look at slideshows. Look at this. Look at YouTube. And then
at one point in time, just because crypto died off, you still needed something that's going to process red 8K footage,
Yeah, they're smart because they have had these inroads into all these different markets. Then it doesn't matter if crypto goes away. You know, they're not leaving the gaming market either. The other thing Huang announced is a special AI for non-player characters.
Oh, boy.
They call Ace. Boy. They're going to give it to gaming companies. In fact, the first one is a Santa Clara, California company that will use it to create non-player characters in their games that hear what you say and respond via AI.
Don't do that. Cue the moral panic. That's coming up next.
NVIDIA Ace will listen to what the gamer says to a character, convert it into text, then dump that into a generative AI program to create a more natural off-the-cuff response. So they're not giving up on gaming anytime soon. And, of course, they have the best graphics cards right now on the market, right? The 4090s. Yeah. They're with ray tracing.
And this is why Intel tried to do graphics with Larrabee and failed. And then they made that. They
have a low-end video card now, Intel does. It's not bad.
Yeah, finally.
It's low cost.
No, it's better than.
It was at the Ace. I can't remember what they call it. Intel.
Remember.
GPU, I can't remember
but
the new
that's,
one.
That's, if you were in the chip world, Arc. You that's saw it. The need Arc. For this. Arc, yeah. Way back in the day, and they were trying. They tried so hard.
Remember they tried mobile, and they were such a failure, they ended up selling off the division. I don't have high hopes.
And now they're going to factories.
Intel. Yeah, you know.
Well, they started out, and they kept their fabs the whole time, and they were really innovative until they got Brian, what's his name? Krasinich,
yeah. Now they got Pat Gelsinger.
He was terrible for Intel.
Although.
But Gelsinger's.
There's like, we were talking about this on Windows Weekly. There's a little trouble at the top, apparently, at Intel. Serious leadership issues. Here's the story from the Wall Street Journal. Again, you know, every time I read about tech in the Wall Street Journal, I always have to think, well, whose ox is being gored here? Once mighty Intel struggles to escape mud hole. like a hippopotamus or a dinosaur stuck in the La Brea tar pits. Rivals such as NVIDIA have left the chip company far behind. CEO Pat Gelsinger aims to reverse firm's fortunes by, as you said, Stacey, vastly expanding its factories. Gelsinger said, we had serious issues in terms of leadership, people, methodology, etc.
Yeah, that's pretty.
So that's him throwing. No, that's him throwing shade at Brian under the bus.
Yeah,
because he was terrible. Like he had no sense of innovation. He was just, and then he was like, we need to get to I don't remember if it was 3 nanometers or what they were going for. And then they were like, well, we're having trouble. He's like, no, we're not. And then just carried on. So that is a problem when you're dealing with actual physics.
And then here's the problem, speaking of physics, with crashing. This is the stock performance of NVIDIA.
Oh, yeah.
AMD.
Oh.
Intel.
So what happens to Intel? Does it die? Is there a scenario where it...
No.
Well, eventually it could. I mean, Gelsinger says we're trying to turn into a service business. That's what the foundry business is. We have no history of this, no expertise at this. So it's a
look at IBM. That's all I have to say.
That's what they did, right?
Look at IBM.
Yep. They're a services business.
Well, no, IBM has... I'm so sorry, y'all. I love IBM's research division, but IBM has nothing going for it right now. But it's still limping along, and it will for quite some time.
Dvorak always said that the only thing keeping IBM alive is it has a lot of patents. But I suspect those patents are expiring. They can't be that much use these days. So maybe that might be what ends up putting them under. Anyway, Intel's getting eaten by TSMC and a lot of other companies, NVIDIA. Interesting article. I like the tar pit analogy. Gelsinger's growth plan is rooted in the expectation that the chip demand will come roaring back. That's part of the problem too, isn't it? The demand is falling off the face of the earth. People aren't buying PCs. PC sales are down 20, 30, 40%.
Way down.
Don't have to.
Intel's issue is they threw everything at PCs and servers. And now server, and they're still doing great in servers, but all of our new server monolithic jobs are AI. Like, that is the big driver of compute demand, AI and crypto. And they don't have like their automotive stuff. They have stuff that runs in there, but the rest of the world is consuming chips that aren't Intel and will be consuming chips that aren't going to be Intel chips forever. So they got to make
Jesus. I just was going to make a PDP joke, a deck joke. The PDP 11 came out 53 years ago.
Yeah. I have PDP. I think it's a, I can't remember if it's an 8, 9, or a 10, but it's really a Raspberry Pi. It's actually a little faster. Faster than the original running on my office. Wow. Coming up in just a bit, is cybersecurity an unsolvable problem?
That was quite an awesome NVIDIA segment.
Thank you,
quite
Stacey.
That was a very chippy show.
Very chippy. I like that. Miss Stacey, thank chippy. You.
Now we're going to talk the philosophy and cybersecurity. Scott Shapiro's new book, which, by the way, is great, Fancy Bear Goes Fishing. I'll tell you a little story from that book. I've been reading it. Mm. But he also proposes that you'll never have a secure computer. And we'll talk about that when we come back in just a bit. First, a plea, an encouragement. Help me with this, Ant, because you're the community manager of our great Twit Club.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Club Twit, that is, sir.
This was something Lisa came up with a couple of years ago. Her thinking being, we would like to be supported by our audience. You know, we're an ad-supported network. I like that. I like that we can give shows away for free, that even if you have not a penny to two pennies to rub together, you can listen to our shows, and we want that to continue.
Yep.
But at the same time, advertising dollars are going way down. It's not just us. It's the industry across the board. We think the club is really our future. So I want to invite you to join Club Twit. I think it's a very good deal. Lisa really wanted to make sure that you got value for a dollar. So primarily the first benefit, and we thought this would be the big one, is no more ads.
Right.
You get all the shows we do completely ad free, no trackers in there, no ads. It's yours, and you get to listen to it. That's, I think, a great benefit. Turned out that wasn't the only benefit. In fact, my mind, maybe not even the best benefit. We have this great Discord.
The magical Discord server.
Twit's always had this
all
amazing
of the conversations.
Always had an amazing community. And this is really a place for the community to get together. You know, we have our forums, we have our Mastodon instance, but this is where club members get together, not only to talk about the shows. You know, we have a Club Twit chat right now going on this week in Google, but also about all of the subjects people are interested in, geeks particularly. There's a whole AI section, anime, autos, coding and comics, food and fitness, movies and music.
There's even sports in there. There's sports talk in our Discord. Did you know that, sir?
Sports and sports
geeks?
Ball.
Yes.
Geeks talking sports?
They talk sports.
I bet there's a lot of pickleball going
on
in there.
No, there's been NBA. There's been F1. I mean, they go at it in there.
And right now, queso, far more important. Queso.
There's a queso chat. I don't think it has this dedicated queso channel, but anyway, we could get one because Ant's in charge. So that's the second benefit. Yep. Ad-free shows, the Discord. Not everybody who joins Club Twit goes in the Discord.
No, they
don't. I really encourage you to. I think sometimes it's a little intimidating to people. Yeah. They go, I don't get it, but you will be welcome. And it really is a great way to communicate.
Can I ask a question here, Ant?
Sure.
Will the whole drama around Leo's hair be the kind of thing that just club members will get to watch?
I guarantee it.
So okay. That's the other thing.
You don't want to miss that.
We have special content only for club members. It's the Twit Plus feed that we offer to all club members. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's stuff like the things that happen before the show and after the show, the bloopers.
Would we stop the show because there's noise next door?
Yeah, it's part of the fun of it. If you're watching live, you get all of that, but not everybody mm-hmm. can watch live. So we excerpt some of that stuff, but we also are able, because we have revenue from the club, to use. I mean, a lot of what that club revenue goes towards developing new shows. We want to bring you new content. So that's why there's Micah Sargent's Hands on Macintosh in there, Paul Thurrott's Hands on Windows, the Untitled Linux Show, the Giz Fizz, Stacey's Book Club every other
this
month.
This Week in Space started week, there.
Well, and we can launch shows out of there, mm-hmm. quite literally. This Week in Space started subsidized by the club, but as it built an audience, we were able to put it out in public. Right now, in the club, Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson. Mm-hmm. That was a show we produced for a long time. Couldn't develop an audience for or an advertising base for, but it had a good audience. It just wasn't as big as it needed to be. So we're doing it in the club. And that's That's the other benefit, is that money, and I promise you that's where that money goes. It goes to keeping the lights on, keeping the staff employed, developing new programming. It's really important to us. We're now almost 8,000 strong. We're growing.
It's awesome.
We're growing. But I have a vision. I have a dream. Sorry.
Wait a minute.
I've been to the mountaintop. I have a vision, let's say that, of getting, I would like, we right now, it's a little more than 1% of everybody who listens to our shows joins the club. Mm-hmm. I don't ever expect it to be half even. I'd like to see it be 5%. That would be
which is public radio territory.
Yeah.
6 to 12% public radio.
I don't want to have to beg as much as public radio
does.
We're as
generous as those tote bag toting.
Yeah. We don't give you tote bags.
Sprout eating, latte sipping public radio people, aren't we?
I think, well, see, one of the things, we are very much more a specific narrow cast niche of technology.
Yep.
I think technology is really important. I think if you want to know what's happening, we're going to be a great, we are a great resource for you. I came up this morning with a new tagline. What did I write? Oh, I thought it was so good.
Netcast you.
No. Because Lisa said we need a quick one.
ADD.
I see.
the home for ADD. That's us.
Need to know what's next. Tune in Twit. How about that? Yeah. Turn on Twit. Something like that. This is where you see what's happening today, what it means for you in the future. And I think we really do a good, sensible, even-handed job.
Yes.
And more importantly, informed job with all of the experts we have on the show. This show and every show we do. I think we're an important thing that I want to keep doing. The club...
We're an important thing.
That's a good slogan.
Tune in. We hear you. if you would help us out, that would be great. I hate to beg. You know, I'm terrible at doing this, and I don't like to do it. But
this was a good begging.
I really think it's important. I believe in what we're doing, and I want to keep doing what we're doing. And I think increasingly it's going to be up to the audience to make sure that that happens. Yeah. Twit.tv/club twit. And if you love our bags, you'll love Club Twit. That's all I can say.
Thank you, Mandy the Clown.
Yes.
Good stuff.
Mandy's great. I love our community. And that's one of the reasons I like doing the club, because I really love those people.
I love it so much when it's not showtime. And I'm saying something on Mastodon or Blue Sky or Twitter, and it's a Twit fan who's there with the reference, with the understanding, with the joke,
with the joke. Yeah.
It's just great to see that you folks everywhere.
Community, baby.
Yeah.
Less Leo, more community.
No, we love Leo. Jeez.
Yes.
Jeez.
No, I agree with you.
Hard-hearted.
I agree with you.
Hard-hearted Higginbotham.
No.
That is true.
All I am is the guy who got it started. At this point, I want to go on much, beyond that. I don't have any attachment.
It's like, I want it to go on while I go on cruises.
While I go away. I go away, you go on. How about that?
Thank you, Doug M.
Doug M, what did Doug M say?
Doug M in Discord says, the best $7 spent every month for the past 2.5 years.
Thank you, Doug M.
Wow, has it been 2.5 years?
Thank you.
It's more than two. It's almost 2.5, yeah. Oh, and there's one other thing. If you subscribe, please tell your spouse.
Yeah, we have family plans now.
But do you know about the chargeback?
There's an issue. if you're going to subscribe to Club Twit, make sure, I'm going to go ahead and subscribe to Club Twit. Hey, Queen Pruitt, I'm subscribing, okay?
Tell the spouse. Because we had a guy subscribe, and his wife said, what is this fraudulent charge? And it costs us time and money when you get a chargeback.
Yeah.
And then, actually, if you get enough chargebacks, Stripe starts looking funny at you. So please tell your family. When you buy Twitter, tell whoever else looks at your checkbook, oh, that weird charge, that's okay.
Yeah,
I
promise it's okay.
I promise.
It's just Club Twit.
Did the guy resubscribe?
Yes, they're good to go.
Because we didn't know exactly what to do. I remember Lisa was kind of going back and forth on how to handle this.
They're good to go.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh boy, but that was funny.
Joseph. And free marriage counseling with your subscription.
Yeah. I'll come to your door. So I started reading this, and actually I kind of Lisa was there when I started it, and I read it out loud, and I kind of threw the Kindle across the room when I
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Scott J. Shapiro. He is, he's been a developer. He you know, he's not ignorant of technology. He's a technologist, but he's become a philosopher of law. But he did write a new book called Fancy Bear Goes Fishing, The Dark History of the Information Age in 5 Extraordinary Hacks. It starts with the first worm ever, which you may remember happened in the, I think, in the 80s. With now I've forgotten his name. He went on to be a co-founder of Y Combinator. Mm. But he, the Morris worm, it was called, Robert Tappan Morris Jr. There is an excerpt, which I really enjoyed, of the chapter on Fancy Bear. Let me see where that is, because that I would recommend everybody read, because that's a wild story. But there's an interesting premise in this that I'm not sure I agree with. And it's kind of, he's a philosopher. You know how philosophers like to argue from first principles and build up a story. The IEEE Spectrum has the strange story of the teams behind the Mirai botnet. I say this is well worth reading. This was a botnet that we talked about, that, and you remember, Stacey, because it took over IoT devices, it took over routers, and it was a nightmare. It was all because a student at Rutgers didn't like the fact that upper class students got priority to enroll in computer science electives. He was pissed, so he DDoSed the entire 40,000. Bots, primarily in Eastern Europe and China, unleashed them on Rutgers computers. And his classmates couldn't get through to register. He did it again the next semester. And in fact, he said, the reason I can do this is because Rutgers has a really inferior DDoS protection company. Mm. They should use mine. He has a DDoS
protection. Did he graduate?
He dropped out.
That's normally how that story goes.
And was caught. We talked a lot about it when he was caught. He was from Fanwood. I don't know. Do you know where that is in New Jersey?
Well, I know, of course. Yeah. Right on the train line into New York. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, kind of one of those kids. A lot of computer kids are like this, who was super smart, but it was ADHD and didn't do well in school, probably because he was too smart. But as usual, I got this too when I was a kid. The teachers attributed it to laziness,
right.
Apathy. You're not living up to your potential, Leo. Didn't help, so he sought refuge in computers, taught himself how to code when he was 12. He started playing Minecraft in ninth grade, started hosting servers. He was DDoSed. One of his Minecraft servers were DDoSed. That's how he learned about distributed denial of service attacks. So he studied them, started writing them himself, got into Rutgers for computer science. But ended up, as you know, DDoSing Rutgers. Eventually got caught by the FBI because it spread. I mean, he basically was the first to create DDoS as a service. He was renting his DDoS capability to other people.
What was that? Oops. Low impact. There was some... I'm sorry, go ahead. I just had a weird brain thought about DDoSing tools. There was one that had a popular name.
So he actually got in a fight. There was a gang fight between other DDoS gangs, Lizard Squad and VDoS. They created something called Poodle Corp that could do 400 gigabits a second, which is a lot of bandwidth to throw at any server. So this kid decided, I'm going to take down Poodle Corp. In any event, he got caught by the FBI. The FBI's Anchorage, Alaska, and New Haven cyber units first shut down Poodle Corp. And then the Mirai Group, who survived in this gang war, started attacking. And the special agent, Peterson, said, oh, now that he's taken down Poodle Corp, let's go after the Mirai botnet. They did catch him. Mm. But what's interesting is he did not serve time. He pled guilty. He was indicted twice, once in New Jersey for his attack on Rutgers, once in Alaska for the Mirai botnet. Violations of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, facing up to 10 years in federal prison. He pled guilty, expressed remorse for his actions. He apologized for the harm he'd caused businesses, Rutgers, the faculty, his fellow students. DOJ said, we're not going to ask for jail time, but maybe they could help us out. The government said, we're going to give you 5 years probation, 2,500 hours of community service, but that community service should include continued work with the FBI. They had already logged 1,000 hours helping the FBI hunt and shut down Mirai copycats. They contributed to more than a dozen law enforcement and research efforts. In one instance, the founders of the Mirai botnet, there were three of them, Paras, Josiah, and Dalton, helped stopping the nation state hacking group. They helped the FBI prevent DDoS attacks aimed at disrupting Christmas holiday shopping. No jail time, just community service. The most poignant moment, this is all from the book, the most poignant moments in the hearing were Paras and Dalton singling out for praise the person who caught them. Paras, this Rutgers kid, said, 2 years ago when I first met Special Agent Elliot Peterson, I was an arrogant fool, believing that somehow I was untouchable. When I met him in person for the second time, he told me something I will never forget. You're in a hole right now. It's time you stop digging. It's a great story. And as people who from the outside, we covered this with the Security Now, and I think on this show too. And so watching this from the outside to actually read what's inside, but this book has more going on with it. And this is where why I'm bringing it into the class today, because
is it going to be on the final?
I'd like to share this with the class. No, I'm not the professor. I'm just a student.
Maestro.
There's an interview with him, in Ars Technica. And his premise is because these are Turing machines, I'll let Stacy explain what a Turing machine is, named after Alan Turing, who, by the way, described how computers should work before there even was an existing one. It was all a mental exercise for him, but he was right.
Wow.
Because they're Turing machines, and that any computer that you might use is general enough to be Turing, what they call Turing complete, it's impossible to protect them. Any Turing complete device will always be subject to hacking.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
This is true.
You think so? Yeah.
Yes. It is impossible. It is impossible to have a secure computer. It is impossible to have true security because either you're going to be hacked like electronically, physically, like via those channels, or you're going to be social engineered because most people are hackable.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. My Chromebook, pretty good.
Yeah, Chromebook's pretty good.
But you Jeff can still would be like to issue a challenge.
Oh, Lord.
You can still be socially engineered.
Well, and you can Chrome extensions. I've said before, Chromebooks are unhackable. And people have said, no, of course they can be hacked. Of course they can, but they do a lot to prevent it.
Nobody wants to bother.
Slow it down a little bit.
Right.
Every company out there should recognize that they are going to get hacked. Yes. You should obviously look for the ways that you're most vulnerable and, you know, figure that out. And most of it will be to social engineering attacks, in quite honesty.
Yep.
And then figure out strategies for mitigating the damage. Maybe that's backups if you're worried about ransomware. Maybe it's keeping some of your most valuable data, like, not on the internet. I mean, there's lots of options, but yeah, no computer is ever going to be secure.
Yeah. He writes in his conclusion, which is called The Death of Solutionism. Solutionism is the idea that there's a solution, that the technology can solve our problems, right? That there is a solution to any
starting
issue.
With the problems it creates.
Yeah. Scott writes that solutionism is ubiquitous in cybersecurity. Every cybersecurity firm promises its technology will keep your data safe. But he says,
I think this guy has a load of crap on that front. Most cybersecurity experts I talk to are like, look, you're going to get hacked.
Right.
You need to monitor. Okay, I obviously have not heard from every single cybersecurity vendor out there, but I have never met a cybersecurity vendor who's like, this will solve everything.
Yeah.
They're like, this will solve this segment of the problem and be monitored.
Anyway, I think, you know, a good book, raising really interesting questions and certainly fascinating stories about five hacks that you and I all covered or paid attention to as they were happening. Maybe not the Robert Morris worm, because that was so far, so long ago. But it's a great story because it's the first internet virus. And I think, okay, so you concur. And okay, I'm glad to hear you say that because these are, in most courses, he writes, I teach, at least one student remains skeptical throughout the entire semester, refusing to buy the intellectual goods I've been selling. My guess is you are similarly skeptical. So he goes through the Turing proof at in the epilogue, the very end, and explains why, because it's a general computer, it will always be attackable. Finally convinced, the student says, actually, I have one more question. Now that the course is over, what happened to Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan? I say that I have to run, but the student can take my course next semester to find out.
Wow.
In the words of P.T. Barnum, always leave him wanting more. Anyway, I recommend it. Fancy Bear Goes Fishing, Scott Shapiro. It's challenging. I mean, like I said, I was going, no, what is he saying? Because it's got a very philosopher's point of view to, you know, this question of, are computers ever going to be secure? But if you're in the business, if you cover this, if you're interested, if you use computers, very much.
It's got a great title.
Yeah.
Dr. Drew in the Discord found that tool that I was thinking of off the top of my head. I was saying LOIC. And it's low orbit ion cannon.
Oh yeah, that's, I think, like, we talked about
that
on
like a gazillion years, right?
Yeah, we've talked about that on Security Now. Yeah, I don't remember the whole story.
Low orbit ion cannon is an open source network stress testing and DDoS application.
Interesting.
Written in C#.
Nice. Crowdsourced DDoS, basically.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I think we could do, if you would like, we didn't do it this week in AI because it was really the whole first half of the show. The Google changelog.
The Google changelog.
I didn't sign up. I don't know. Maybe somebody here did. Maybe you did. Google's SGE is available now in preview. This is their... because you're a workspace user.
Well, I even tried to get in. You wouldn't let me in because of that. Then I went to, you know, a regular Google account and still said I couldn't get in.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm on the waiting list, I guess. But this is their... I'm not sure I want it, but I want to play with it, right? Their AI-enabled search.
Sure, keep it. I'm okay without it for now.
Yeah. I mean,
I want to try it, but I haven't been able to yet.
I played with Bard and compared it to ChatGPT. I think ChatGPT is better. But I think it's interesting. So the idea is Bard and ChatGPT are frozen in time, right? ChatGPT is like late last year, September 2021, I think, actually. But if you add search indexes, you're adding current information mm-hmm. into it. So mm-hmm. maybe it's more useful than, I don't know. Google Assistant's third-party notes and lists integration is shutting down.
Surprise, surprise.
So you've been able to set a notes and list provider. I used to use AnyDo, which I really like, which is a to-do list, a third-party to-do list. And so I could say to my Google Voice, add something to my to-do list, and it would add it to my AnyDo list. Mm-hmm. No, not so fast anymore. Now it's going to be Google Keep. Or I guess Google Tasks. Is it going to lose Google Keep as well?
I thought Task
maybe
was gone.
Maybe,
or
that's
or was
interesting.
It Keep that was gone?
Yeah, I used to
one
use AnyDo. AnyDo's gone for sure. I know that. The notes and lists integration.
Wait, no, not Keep. I use Keep all the time.
It's got to have Keep.
I thought Task was going bye-bye.
Okay, we asked the company whether Google Keep will be impacted or if the upcoming Google Tasks integration, which is not yet widely rolled out, is the only service. They say, no, you can use Google Keep and Tasks.
Okay. For now.
But that's it for now. Well, they're both, at least they're both Google, right?
Yeah.
You remember Magic Compose? They showed that off where you could write a letter of in various degrees of nastiness, complaining about something. Strongly Messages worded. Magic Compose beta starts rolling out. It's only for RCS, and you'll have priority if you're a Google One subscriber, which I am. So you'll have to sign up for the Google Messages beta program on the Play Store. It's only available in English on Android phones with U.S. SIM cards for those 18 and older. Well, that rules out everybody in this room. Lastly, Google will give priority access to Google One Premium members as more spots become available. Oh, whoa, wait a minute. The subscription tier starts at $10 a month or $100 a year? Oh, no, I'm sorry.
You have one.
That's Google One.
Yeah.
I thought they were talking about this feature. I am paying for Magic Compose, baby. When activated in a conversation, Magic Compose will send up to 20 previous messages to Google servers to generate relevant contextual suggestions, including emojis, reactions, and URLs, but not attachments.
That's going to freak people out.
Voice messages or images. And then you'll be presented from now on with a list of suggestions to. So it's like autocomplete, but with much more knowledge of how the conversation has been going. And if you tap the pencil with a sparkle icon, it'll let you customize it with one of seven styles. Remix, which is just give me another one. Excited. Hey, wait a minute. Oh, let's go. Chill. Okay, man. No problem. Shakespeare. Prithee, my lord. Shall we dine tonight al fresco? Lyrical. I don't know. What is lyrical? Like, I don't know.
Like the New Yorker?
Lyrical, like a poem. After many a summer dies the swan. On the other hand, we could go for a walk. Formal or short. One. Some are particularly heavy about inserting emojis. And of course, you're not forced to take any of them. You can thumbs up or thumbs down suggestions. Look for that. Magic Compose. I'm excited. NFL Sunday ticket. NFL's coming back when? Late August, usually, right?
September.
September?
Early September.
I already paid for my Sunday ticket, $300.
Oh, bless your heart.
Turn it smackers.
Oh, gosh.
It will support.
Are you going to invite Ant over to watch?
Ant, come on over.
Okay, sure.
It'll be unlimited simultaneous streams. We'll
bring
have one
kids
little.
To Ant.
Yeah, bring everybody.
And their whole team.
Go ahead. Well, I'll tell you.
That's a good idea because of the bars. You know?
Right.
All of the TVs in the bars. And
one subscription,
times,
you have five TVs, yeah. You can have all the games.
Well, isn't that a different license?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, they say in your home. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. No matter where you purchase NFL Sunday Ticket, you'll have access to unlimited streams in your home and two additional streams outside of your home.
See?
So this is, I think YouTube TV, as expensive as it is, because it supports six people. You know, you have to kind of be in the same geographic area, though, I noticed.
Well, I think the caveat was like every month or something weird like that, or every couple of months, because I had that issue with the hard hit up in college. And when he came home, it was fine for a little while when he went back to college to watch television.
Oh, I wonder if it's like, you know how Netflix does its password sharing, its anti-password sharing? They do it every 30 days. You have to check into your home IP address.
Oh, okay.
Your device does.
Yeah, Google's got all these geographic rules. I know because I inadvertently told it I was in North Carolina or somehow, right? It thought I was in Carolina and then it cut me off in the Bay Area.
Yep.
And then I had to call them and they said, well, they're going to have to cancel your subscription. I'm going to give you a credit and you can redo it. And blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it worked.
You actually got a human?
I talked to a human. Yeah, in chat.
Wow.
Well, he's Leo Laporte.
No, I didn't say, who I am? I said, no, and I don't care.
When you pay real money for these things, you get
real
human.
I pay a lot of money. Yeah. Oh, it's almost $100 a month.
Yeah.
So this was originally going to be two concurrent streams that on Reddit. They said, update, no more streaming limits in your home. Which is good because our kid wants to watch the Packers games.
Yep.
We're going to be watching the Niners games. Maybe somebody's going to come over and want to watch.
Smartest man in the house there.
Yeah. Who's your team?
Packers, baby.
Packers, baby. Maybe somebody's going to watch Aaron Rodgers play for the Jets. I don't know.
No, I'm okay with that.
All right.
I'm okay with that.
So anyway, that's actually, interestingly, Google doing this, they actually responded in Reddit in answer to people complaining, oh, two channels isn't enough. We need more. So good on them for doing that. Google is phasing out the original Chromecast. I still have quite a few of these. It's more than 10 years old now.
Man, I killed that thing pretty quickly because it kept getting too daggum hot.
It does get hot. Yeah. They have ended support. Your last update came out, I think, pretty recently. Remember that $35 streaming stick?
It was a cool value.
Yeah.
But again, it was totally useless for us. It just would overheat and it would shut down.
If yours is working now, it'll still work. They say users may notice a degradation in performance. The end of support was at the end of last month. Last firmware update on your Chromecast. And finally, it's the end of the line for YouTube Stories. I guess we could have seen this coming. We hardly knew ye. Actually, June 26th will be the last day. They're moving it over to whatever they have. That the other thing is shorts, right?
Shorts. Which is going totally fine for them.
Yeah. Is it?
Hmm?
Okay. This was basically their, you know, TikTok clone, right?
Yep.
So this is often the case where companies copy other companies and then it doesn't work and they the company launched in 2017 under the name Reels, which is what Facebook and Instagram use.
Instagram.
Yeah. Later renamed to YouTube Stories in 2018. June 26th, the last day to upload a story. Move it on over to Shorts.
YouTube Shorts was a bit of a mess when they launched. The interface was clunky and you couldn't always upload stuff that you would make offline to put into it. But now it's so much smoother and better. They've definitely been working on it.
And I'm figuring they're watching carefully what happens to TikTok, because if TikTok gets banned,
hey, why not?
Here, they're ready.
Just
they're
come
step
on
in.
Over to the Google side. I mean, the YouTube side.
Yeah.
I mean, the Google side.
So if you're on YouTube, there's Shorts are in the left-hand side here. There's home and then there's shorts. I click that and then I get a short, which, by the way, does that look a little bit like a TikTok?
No comment.
Yeah. Jennifer Lawrence wants to ask him. I think I saw this on TikTok before the internet. Nobody could search things. Eddie Van
like
Halen.
Doc Searle's playing the guitar.
But Eddie Van Halen, buddy.
It does sort of look like that.
There's David Letterman. It's a bunch of old people. Aubrey Plaza. Yeah.
I love her.
Here's Obama talking about Between Two Ferns.
This is all old.
This is all old stuff. Best reaction. Yeah, if you want to be hip and with it, you go to TikTok. You don't go to YouTube Shorts. But boy, kind of talk about a TikTok clone. It's vertical videos. You scroll up. It's just like, it's just like it. Where's all the women in bikinis, though? I don't understand.
I believe they showed
it. It hasn't learned you yet.
No one else gets women in bikinis.
Just me? Just me? Okay. All right.
Just you.
Here's a guy making quarter pounders. God, I did this for a long time. It hasn't changed at all. It's exactly how you do it.
Except you don't have two people. Like onions.
Yeah, you go home, you smell like the grill.
Always struck me as probably the worst part of it.
So cheap. Well, did you see those machines for squirting the mustard and the ketchup? It's exactly measured out, exactly how much mustard and ketchup.
That's brilliant.
And here comes the quarter pounder. There you go.
Well, they don't do mustard anymore. It's regional. Pisses me off. I can't get mustard.
What? Look, see, mustard and ketchup. Mustard and ketchup.
It's regional. It's somewhere where they do mustard still. Some places they don't do it.
Well, but if you ask for mustard, you can get it, right?
You get a little packet of mustard.
That's not a bit. That's shocking. Oh, here's a man in bikini. I don't know what he's doing.
What is he doing, dude?
He's rolling around in the water.
Are you confused?
He's very confused. All right, here they are painting a directional arrow in a parking lot. Okay, this is boring.
People
and that's the Google changelog. Yay.
I see why you get the women in bikinis.
Stacey, I just want to let you know that before we did the Google changelog, he said that was the first half of the show. Just so you know.
But we're almost done.
Another lemon bar.
We're almost done. I am now to Jeff Jarvis's stories.
Yay.
You only did one of yours.
Yeah. Stop stirring up trouble.
I'm not dying yet. Y'all keep going.
She had a lemon bar to hold her over.
I had a lemon bar to tide me over. I've got big plans.
Oh, yeah? You going out tonight?
I am.
Where does one go out in Bainbridge Island? Is there like a disco?
My child and I are going to go out to eat.
Oh, that'll be fun. That's always fun.
We're celebrating the end of their school year.
Oh, nice. Is there a graduation?
No, they're a junior. So next year.
Nice. How about junior prom? Was there a junior prom?
College hell.
Yes. Eris was in charge of the junior prom. I had to help decorate.
What was the theme?
I think it was A Midsummer Night's Dream.
That's cool. And you had to decorate.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, there was a little rebellion happening. Very much drama. I cannot with these children.
Of course. Forget it.
Of course.
Exactly. I'm like, ugh. But it's all good.
Supreme Court has rejected a lawsuit, did not give cert to a lawsuit to hold Reddit responsible for hosting child pornography. This seems to be a support of Section 230.
Once again, right after last week.
Good news. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, they declined to take up a case of a victim of sex trafficking who sought to hold Reddit responsible for hosting images of child pornography. Obviously, Reddit, like any responsible site, as soon as it discovers that, immediately deletes it, blocks the user. I mean, they don't just let it sit there. It's not 4chan or anything.
Right.
So I think after the justices, let's see here. This is from Supreme CNN. After the justices avoided any meaningful ruling on the scope of immunity for tech companies in the Google case, we talked about that, Tamna and Gonzalez. Today's denial of review in the Reddit case suggests their aversion was more than just about the Google case specifically, and the court is willing, at least for now, to leave any changes to Section 230 to Congress.
Like there's a presumption that it should change.
Right.
No, leave it alone.
Yeah.
Just leave it alone.
Yeah. Which is not to say we're in favor of child pornography or sex trafficking or anything.
No.
That's not what this is about. This is Reddit or any social network responsible for stuff other people, you know, its users put online, especially since they're making an effort to take it down and get rid of it.
Exactly. That's the key. And 230 gives them the freedom to do so.
Yes. So good. That's a happy story. I'm going to let you, Jeff, I've ignored all the rest of them. I'm going to let you pick one and only one.
One and only one.
Well, you can pick a couple. But none of these seem that interesting.
They're not. The Andy Jassy kill list I found interesting.
The Jassy and the Google one.
Okay. So Andy Jassy, the CEO of Amazon, has a list of 37 projects that were created during Jeff Bezos' time that are gone. Mm-hmm.
Were some of them celebrity voices?
Oh, we didn't mention that. I am pissed off. I bought Samuel Jackson. I bought Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, my God. Just get a refund. Quit.
I liked being able to say it was really fun. I could, if I had my Echo here, I'd show you. I could say, what's the weather? And then it would do it in the, you know, the normal Echo voice. And then I'd say, hey, Samuel, what's the weather? And he'd swear. He'd say something profane.
Of course.
And nasty, and then tell me the weather in his voice, which I loved. And then I'd say, hey, Melissa. And then she'd like do something Melissa McCarthy-esque and give me the weather. I loved that.
You'll be okay, sir.
I think you are one of the few people who are doing this.
Apparently, there weren't a lot of people doing it.
Andy Jassy is tougher than what's her name at Google.
Ruth
Porat, I think. Yeah, he's slicing through.
Let's see what's on their kill list.
I think that's a good thing.
Alexa built in.
I knew you'd say that.
A feature for the Alexa smartphone app to let people summon the digital assistant using only their voice. It's a little too much like Beetlejuice. Alexa for business. I'm gonna say Alexa. I'm gonna say
Madam A.
Echo. HIPAA compliant health skills. Madam A
the
internet
web version of Madam A.
That was
Alexa.com
traffic. Yeah.
This has nothing to do with Madam A or Echo
web traffic.
And this was always a source of confusion. You remember back in the day, the Alexa site rankings.
I don't even remember that.
Right.
Oh yeah, it was the only way we really knew. Amazon
bought
it.
This is old stuff too.
Yeah, Amazon bought it in 1999. It's a long time ago.
But now, if you go there, if you go to Alexa.com,
yeah,
it says coming soon. I guess not.
Dying soon. Amazon 4-star, which is a store which sold highly rated items.
Did you ever go to those?
No.
They were so weird.
It was very weird.
It was stuff they sell on Amazon that people like. Would you go there, look at it, and then order it on Amazon, or could you buy it there?
No, you could buy it right there, but it was a weird hodgepodge, right?
Yeah, it's not. There's no.
Yeah, it was. It was like the dollar store, except it wasn't a dollar. It was so much stuff. It was so cluttered.
It's more than the dollar store. Amazon
made no sense together. There was no taxonomy to it.
Amazon Academy in India. Amazon said we remain committed to India. Amazon Assistant, a browser extension for price comparisons between Amazon and other sites. This is Amazon Books. Oh, that was the physical bookstore. Yeah,
that made me sad.
I thought, were they good? I've never been to one, but
they were okay. If you like this, you might like this.
This is Amazon. Andy has really been grappling with this whole brick and mortar strategy that Jeff had.
Yeah,
and they have said that they're not going to get rid of the Go stores. They're not going to get rid of Whole Foods, but
they are getting rid of the Go stores.
Is that one of them?
That's one of them. Amazon Go. It closed 8 of the things and says it. Yeah.
Amazon Care, Amazon Distribution India, Amazon Drive. That's free for Prime members, but they're making it out just photos. Amazon Explore, which was a virtual tours portal. Amazon Flex, Amazon Food India, Amazon Glow. Oh, the children's video conferencing and game device. Remember that would project.
That was such an interesting concept, yeah, but it was only there for like 6 months.
That's pretty brief. Yeah,
I didn't think it was that long.
Last year. There's Amazon Go. April 2023, the company closed 8 of its cashierless locations. It still has 20 more stores, and it says we're committed.
Yeah, they're still licensing the tech. There's still a couple out there.
Yeah, just walk out. They're licensing it to Walmart and others. Yes, right.
There's also one that combines with a Starbucks pickup. Hear me.
Oh, nice.
New York Times building.
Halo, we know, is gone. Amazon Ignite, a hub for teachers and creators of education kind of curriculum site. Amazon Kid Plus Games. Well, I can go on and on and on, obviously.
You know, they don't mention the Look camera that you got rid of.
Oh, well, that's gone, isn't it? Yeah.
It is totally gone. There's even more.
We can add more DP reviews on this DP list, although they're still posting articles to DP Review. I'm wondering, you have soft opens. Can you have a soft close?
Well, I thought something was going on with Petapixel and DP Review.
Petapixel archived it,
right?
But if I go to dpreview.com, I've seen new articles.
You sure? Because I haven't even bothered since Jordan and Chris has been over on. Well, that is new.
This is May 23rd. Yeah. Richard Butler. ZV. By the way, I'm thinking of buying this. I don't know. Should I ZV-1 Mark II vlogging camera?
No.
This is why I'm really glad that DP Review is gone. Because, wait a minute. No, maybe I'll buy the. I have a Q2. Maybe should I get the Leica Q3?
Dude, that Leica's
$6,000.
You came back from your last trip saying you weren't going to take cameras anymore.
I know, but I love this little Leica. It's barely a camera.
Leica's are pretty cool.
It's barely a camera. So they're posting. So I don't know what happened. They were supposed to be long gone by now. I don't know.
Yeah, that's confusing.
Maybe Amazon changed his mind. Fabric.com? Fire TV Recast? Free? Yeah, I think so.
Never heard of it.
E-commerce category? Yeah, apparently.
Still don't know what it is.
Free U.S. grocery delivery. Game On. Anyway, Kindle Newsstand.
The list keeps going.
It's a long freaking list.
That's good, though. Jesse said, look here. We're Amazon, and we're here to make money.
We don't need to do everything. Yeah.
That's it.
All right, that was a pretty good one, Jeff. You've earned yourself another one.
Okay. the pressure is on. I don't know if I can take this.
We've already done quite a few of the stories for me, by the way.
You don't have to, man.
Now, Stacey, I do have to.
Twitter is, according to Fidelity, remember, what did Elon pay? $44 billion.
Right?
Fidelity, which is one of the people who lent money to Elon for this, have written down their investment.
Taking notes, huh?
They say Twitter is only worth about $15 billion, one-third of what it was.
Which is what the bankers put into it. And then when the bankers take it over out of bankruptcy, He's in jail.
I have a story that I was excited about.
Okay.
Sonos won their 32.5, or they won their patent infringement fight with Google.
Oh.
So they won $32.5 million.
Good. I saw that with Mr. Scooter X. Yeah, I did see that with Mr.
Scooter X. So Sonos was the first to have party mode, where you'd have multiple speakers. We use it all the time here in the studio. We have speakers all over in all the offices. And John, when everybody leaves, turns on strange music.
It's not when everybody leaves. It's not when everybody leaves.
Oh, still when people are here. And it's party mode. And this was the amazing, the secret sauce of Sonos. If you tried to do that with any other speakers, you'd have weird echo because they weren't exactly in sync. Somehow Sonos made them all synchronize. Then Google did the same thing with their speakers. And Sonos said, hey, wait a minute.
This is our
hold on there.
The other thing that was worth noting in there is they won. It was a per unit royalty. So $2.30 for every unit sold. So they sold, Google sold 14.1 million speaker devices, which honestly, that's not a lot.
That's a low. You think that's a low number? I guess it is.
I mean, don't you for?
No. Yeah. Cause I have about five of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I mean, I've bought at least four, five.
I bought quite a few.
Yeah. All of those were infringing. That's not that many.
So a jury in San Francisco found Google liable on Friday, and they're going to have to pay out $32.5 million. Google has been pulling features from the speakers and displays prior to this result. So they clearly felt like this was
going to be
an issue. Google has sued Sonos in return, and that trial's ongoing, so it may not really be over. I don't know. Sonos is the plucky little guy here, and they did own that market, and it did hurt them. I'm sure that everybody now can do this party mode. There's nobody that can't. I think there's somebody they figured it out.
Jeff. I stole a story from you, but you go right ahead.
Jeff's happy.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
That's about it. Let's do this.
Wait, I can't steal from Jeff.
I think it's over. It's over.
No. Well, we should. Let me complain for about this. Is that Twitter has the one place where academics could study social media?
All those
Twitter.
Bastards.
And they've completely cut that off now. And so you can't get Facebook data, you can't get Twitter data. It's awful. And Mastodon data doesn't matter as much as I love it. And
you can't get it for free, is what you're saying?
No, right. Yeah, they want to charge you millions upon millions upon millions.
That they can do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but is it usually you carve out options for researchers. Mm-hmm. And so it's one way to be like when you've got an actual researcher trying to do something to say, no, I don't think you should be able to look this stuff up. Okay. We're going to keep this all secret.
So that's okay.
Facebook did it for a while.
Yeah, that is a problem. But I mean, I could see them saying, we can charge you a smaller fee, a much smaller
fee. I think if you already bought it, you should get to keep it. I don't understand how they can demand that you delete stuff you already bought. That's what puzzles me. Maybe you only rented it. I guess that was the deal. You didn't really own it. But a lot of researchers are complaining because they aren't going to be able to keep the data that they purchased for research studies.
Did they not download it?
Yeah, they downloaded it. But Twitter's saying, now you have to delete it. So it must have been an ongoing license, right? And they don't want to break the rules, so they're going to delete it.
So today I just talked to folks who were convened the Black Twitter Summit, and some of them were working on a new neat project, which we should mention here. If you go to betterplatform.net, is to work on a people's history of Twitter.
Oh, I love that.
I'm trying to raise some money.
So I went on a Blue Sky where apparently it was decided some people, Black Twitter movers, decided, no, we're not going to do Mastodon there. They're not welcoming. And so they went to Blue Sky, and now there's a massive moderation. Most every time I go to Blue Sky, all they're talking about is moderation.
Because they really screwed up. They screwed the puppy on one bad case. One of the people who convinced a lot of Black Twitter people to come on to Blue Sky then got harassed by a racist, and they did finally take down the post, but they didn't take down the account, and they went back and forth, and now they have new rules. They're learning as they go, and they screwed up a big case early on, and people are angry about that. So
This is
see how much they learn.
Blue Sky is not as fun as I wanted it to be. I'll be honest.
Well, it goes through weird. Now there are more than 100,000 now. So, but it goes through these weird, you know, for a while it was all about Alf. It goes through these weird things where everybody's silly. They were silly. And then they got very serious about moderation. And yeah, that's too bad. I feel like an opportunity was missed. I mean, if you really wanted a black Twitter diaspora, you could be who? Why didn't somebody start a Mastodon instance that was black Mastodon? Why didn't they just do that?
Well, that was part of the issue, and this was Jonathan Flowers, who was one of the conveners of the Black Twitter Summit. You had that discussion, and people come in, well, make your own. And so we don't really care about your lived experience for Mastodon as a whole, but you can go have your...
That's not true. Own. Certainly Andrea Langston and a number of black users, this guy named Ann Pruitt, are on Twit Social. You don't feel unwelcome, do you?
No.
And I moderate very carefully to make sure nobody's harassed.
No, I'm going to your point explicitly, Leo, is when you tell someone to create your own, you're also saying in some cases, well, we don't care about your experience in the whole.
I understand. Saying that. They're more than welcome on, anybody's welcome on Twit Social. There are plenty of instances there would be more than welcome.
Yeah, of course. Of course
I didn't
course.
See any issue, frankly, that people weren't welcome.
No.
And... look, it's one of the great things you can do with Mastodon that you can't yet do with Blue Sky is somebody who's technically literate, I'll help you do it if you want to do it, Ant, can create a Mastodon instance that is absolutely guaranteed to be a home to people and welcoming to people of color or not or whatever they
Anybody
want.
Anybody can do that as long as they're willing to put in the work is the bottom line.
And it's not that hard. I mean, I don't put in a lot of work. I'm not a wizard of anything or anything. I went to a place that offers hosting and I bought the hosting.
Yeah.
And it worked. Anyway, good. You went to Blue Sky. How did that work out for you? I think any centralized solution is a bad idea.
Well, it depends on what they really do with Federation. They have the one thing they did in the last week was they now have a whole bunch of pick your own algorithms.
Well, then I know they have those fees. Best case, they federate, and then you could do what you could already do on Mastodon, your own Blue Sky instance for Black Twitter.
Yeah.
You already got that. It baffles me. I think people wanted to be upset. Anyway, betterplatform.net.
.net, which is the folks who wanted to buy Twitter. Remember some time back that they wanted to, 2016? Wasn't going to happen. But now they're trying to do a people's history of Twitter, and they're bringing in academics and ex-employees and others, and I'm looking to try to raise some money for
nice. How do we contribute? Just go to the site?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. It says up there on the top, collaborate with us. Help write history.
Click to collaborate. Nice.
I just need to find more people to follow on Blue Sky because it's just a bit
it's
boring to me. Because there's a lot. Now, granted, there is a lot of activity on there, but I just don't care about half the stuff on there. I don't want to get on there and continue to talk about the bullcrap of U.S. politics or all of the other problems going on. I just like to go in and have mindless conversation about interesting stuff, if you will.
Ant just wants mindless conversation. Can't we have a service that is filled with mindless conversation?
You know, us. Right. We're hanging out here.
That's what we are, podcast.
At D-Table. We have mindless, good conversation, you know, even though we have different
Well, thanks a lot.
You found your people.
Yes.
We're right here. Thanks, Sam.
Nah, but you know what I mean, though. It's just I scroll through there, and I'm following right now 26 people, but most of my
feed
is...
that's part of the problem.
That's the thing. I got to find who
make some lists.
Most of the people I've... most of the people in my stream showing up is Tech Meme and John Scalzi.
Yeah. Because it's still small enough. If you go to somebody you like, not me, and Stacey's not doing much.
Follow me. I follow a lot of people. Look at who I follow.
And then go see who they follow, and you can build a good list. Like, how many am I following?
Yeah, that's how I've got a couple of people that I do follow. Because I looked at who you're following, Mr. Jarvis.
And I'm following 374 people. And I'm following good people.
Oh, I'm only 110. But they're good people.
They're good people. Yeah. And you know, it makes it really easy if you do that. You could see there's a follow on button right next to it. Mm-hmm. You can follow. But
it's quite a mix. It's people.
Here's my problem.
Like Amanda Knox is in there. Who would have thought of that?
Here's my problem. A lot of people, first of all, I think we got to recognize there's never going to be another Twitter. It
I'm
may
totally
be,
fine with that.
It may be that Twitter ends up surviving and becomes Twitter again. I think that's actually a possibility.
It's just like saying we need a new Instagram. We're not going to get another Instagram.
Right. It's Everybody sad. I'm mourning that too.
It's not going to happen.
Instagram's gone. That's very sad. It's a real loss.
I talked to Andre Brock Jr. just before the show, the author of Distributed Blackness, one of the great experts on Black Twitter. And, you know, he's still there. And I said, what would it take for you to leave? And he said, pretty much the wheels just fall off.
Right. If it stops
working. He's planning
to stay. I'm not there because I don't really want to support what Elon's doing with it. And I feel like adding content to it is supporting it. I do think that at some point, Elon's going to tire of this toy, or the banks are going to foreclose and somebody is going to get a hold of it. And
what's the point of the CEO?
Well, Ed, it's really interesting you raise that because one of the stories I put on the rundown, see, I snuck one more in.
Well played, sir.
Stacey's going to sleep. Is that they hired an ad executive. He hired an ad executive as the CEO, yet the story said that they basically have given up selling ads and they're just going programmatic. So that's how you're seeing, you know, more bad, crappy ads thrown in there. So they know that there's not a good ad business there. Ben and Jerry's just stopped doing it. Others are going to stop doing it. They're not going to come back. It's worth a third of what it was. Hmm. I think it was ego Crazy. Or politics. Yeah.
But there is there's something still alive there. There's a little kernel. You know,
there is.
And
there
I do think it seems likely to me that it's not going to die.
No,
that Elon's going to lose control of it at some point. Somebody's going to take it over. You know, maybe it'll be somebody like Condé Nast, which has done a decent job with Reddit. Not perfect, but decent. Mm. Somebody who is a benign corporate overlord who says, well, let's fix this, let's hire enough people to keep this running. And it comes back. And I think there's a lot of people like you, Ant, who would go back. I'm very happily going back.
Broadcast mode over there. All of my feed is just broadcasting stuff for hard hit.
Well, I'm sure it drives Lisa crazy and our marketing people crazy that I still have 500,000 people over on Twitter and I don't post. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that drives them nuts. Mm. But I just don't want to participate. And but I don't think it's dead. It's like a tree that's not looking good. It's like my snake plant. It's kind of brown at the tips and some of the leaves are going, but it could be resuscitated.
Yeah, and coaches are still there. I'll say that because I still talk to some coaches.
A lot of people, a surprisingly large number of people have not left. Mm-hmm. I was a little
but
worried
at some
about
point,
Blue
it could
Sky.
Become
Blue Sky,
predominantly bad people.
A lot of people left Twitter for Blue Sky, and it you know the problem is the bigger that Blue Sky gets, the main instance gets, the harder it's going to be for Federation to actually take off.
But damn it, stop leaving Twitter, going to Blue Sky to come talk about Twitter.
Well, that's bad too.
I see a lot of that. Like, you really came over here to fuss about Twitter?
Blue Sky's the closest thing to keeping Twitter alive. But Twitter isn't dead yet. I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. I love our little Mastodon instance, but it's not a Twitter. It's not going to do that.
Yeah, Mastodon's an entirely different experience.
Yeah. I like these, what do they call them? Feeds, my feeds that they created. I think these are really great.
Oh, I've not noticed that.
That's a nice new feature.
That's fairly new.
Oh, it's brand new. So
if you go to the My Feeds, you can pick them. Go to My Feeds and Settings, and then you can pick different feeds that people are creating.
They have some base feeds that they've started, and then there are new feeds that you can subscribe to. And in mobile, it's even easier. It's at the bottom. It's the upside-down breast with things coming off of it.
Okay. Save feeds. Okay.
Yeah. So I subscribe to What's Hot Popular with Friends, so I know what my friends are following. Yeah. Mutuals, which are people who we follow each other. Catch up in case I meet something, and then there's the Blue Sky team has its own.
Well, let's discover new feeds. Click on that, because there's all kinds of
A whole bunch of them.
I don't have any of this.
I don't have discover new feeds.
Yeah,
I
so don't start with, go to really? My feeds, click the gear.
I'm in My Feeds.
Click the gear.
Gear. Up
top. Then under at the bottom, discover new feeds.
And then here's the other thing that's kind of confusing. If you want to find, if you think you're going to find all these feeds you've subscribed to under My Feeds, you won't find them there. You find them on the home page on the top.
They become, if you look at the top here, they become a tab.
Took me 5 minutes to figure that out.
There's a black sky.
Yeah. That's it.
Which
What's
is
nice about that?
From black users. From
it's an easy way to
hashtag.
Yeah, on Twitter
don't
I have
pictures.
Don't show pictures. There was a there's been weird trends. Like there was a trend to show bottoms.
Oh, there's like there's a whole section for lewds and for not suitable for works and for more nudes.
Yeah,
there's quite a few of those.
Yeah. But on the other hand, if you follow cat pics, the cats are naked, but who cares? Well, that's not a cat. I like the cat pics feed. All cats, all the time.
Tech news. Can I just search sports? Because I haven't seen one thing about sports in here.
Well, it's probably...
You could start talking about sports and people will find you and then you can follow them.
Yeah. Yeah, let's give that a try. Because I have a whole...
What's the difference between a handful and a list? Of
toots or skeets or whatever these things are called, and there's like nothing, no response on them, hardly.
A feed... So a list is just a list of people to follow. Feed can also be created to follow hashtags and other things. It's a much more sophisticated technology to create feeds. So just, you know, here's NBA. Post with so this is just a hashtag. If there's a hashtag NBA in it, that'll be in the feed. Right. So that's where it's a little more sophisticated than just lists. Mm-hmm. Oh, podcasting.
I saw that.
I should add that.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder how much stuff is in here.
11, liked by 11 users.
Yeah. So this is by name. There's Amanda Knox, you mentioned. The good news is there's a lot going
on. It's early.
And there's a lot going on. There's a lot of creativity happening. Mm-hmm. The internet community has decided we want something like Twitter. We need Twitter. And if it's not going to be Twitter, then let's try some other things. And I think that's all great.
Using Nostr at all?
No, I have an account on it, but I haven't used it. That's another kind of very similar to Blue Sky, right? It has its own federation protocol. Jack put money into it. People who are trying to avoid Jack
Rabble
Dorsey.
Rabble has left Scuttlebutt to go there.
Rabble has left Scuttlebutt?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was his story.
There's a story in the rundown. I hate to do it again.
No. What is this creeping rundown? No.
No.
Line 68.
No.
Lengthy analysis of Blue Sky versus Nostr. Oh, this could be a good 20-minute or here.
This wouldn't be so bad, except I get so excited when it's time for our thing. And I'm like,
ladies
we're
and gentlemen,
almost done. And then that goes for like 30 minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you know what's next? It's circus time. No, it's going to be our picks of the week coming up. We'll start the picks of the week this week with Stacey Higginbotham. What's your thing?
I don't have a thing.
You were excited and now you don't have a thing. You're confusing me here. What's going on, Stacey?
Instead, y'all. Calm yourself. Okay. And I can't remember. I read this book called Poverty. Very recently. Did I tell you about it yet?
No.
I think you might have mentioned it, but I can't remember.
If y'all don't remember it, then that is my pick of the week. Because I've been reading it, and God, man, I feel real bad. It's called Poverty by America. It's by Matthew Desmond, who is the guy who did Evicted. You need to read this book. It shows how we...
Do we create poverty?
Making individuals... We have a role in the creation of poverty, and there's a reason why so many people in America are so incredibly poor. And I think given the amount of income inequality, given the amount of hair pulling we have about like dealing with homeless people, you need to read this and you need to like really consider like our role and how we what we need to do and what we need to give up and how to talk about this.
If he alone had a solution for homelessness, I would be thrilled. Does he talk about what we can do about it?
He talks about the costs and like NIMBYism and owning second homes and
why there's homelessness.
Landlords.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he talks about why we have such systemic poverty and he blames us. It's not a book that you're going to feel great reading, but you should read it anyway.
Yeah.
It's really it's going to make you angry, but probably feel a little guilty too. So
capitalism,
that is my
Issue 8 AI is capitalism.
It's
I'm a capitalist.
It's kind of late stage capitalism. That's the problem.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Did I tell you my book idea? No. I'm not going to write it because I would never write a book.
Get ChatGPT to write it and it's you're done.
So my book topic is why AI and the IoT are incompatible with capitalism. It is basically we are building ourselves into this coercive surveillance state that is never going to do us any good. And it's just going to grind us down.
Oh, no, Shoshana Zuboff. Oh, no.
And you can call it moral panic, but I think I would make compelling arguments.
It's more Cory Doctorow than Shoshana Zuboff. How about that?
Yeah. Cory Doctorow and I, we're on the same page.
Absolutely agree with Cory in every respect.
Hey, have you read Red Team? Is it Red Team?
No, I haven't read it yet. Oh, I know.
It's really good.
Is it? Oh, maybe
we'll have to make it a book club. Hold on, let me get the right title.
We'll have to make it a book
club. Red Team Blues.
It's about a forensic accountant. You know how exciting they are.
Yay.
He does a good job.
He is the new James Bond. He's a forensic accountant, and he's going to be the next James Bond. I think Corey has goals, visions of having a movie series. He's talking to Albert R. Broccoli, the whole thing. I will read it. It's on my list. Let me add that to my books. And there's a very good New York Times book review of Poverty, if you want to kind of the short version of the book. But I did buy.
You're going to see fewer things from Stacey because Stacey is buying fewer things. But as a big,
well, you know what I'm doing now is I got the new Kindle Scribe that you write with. You know, you have and it's big. It's 8x10. It's like a nice size. Well, I know it seems big to like hold it, but on the other hand, I like it because it's more like reading a book. And I like it, so I'm buying more stuff on the Kindle.
How do you compare it to the Remarkable?
Well, I'm glad you asked because this Sunday I will be doing a rundown of the Kindle Scribe, the Remarkable 2, and an iPad running good note software and the pros and cons of each.
You said you're doing this Sunday?
Do you need your Kobo back?
It would be on a show that I like to call Ask the Tech Guys.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for asking.
Good show.
Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Little preview. You still use
this like this call-in show?
No, I don't. I don't use the Remarkable. I'm not a pen guy. And the reason, but this is what I'll give you a preview of what I'm probably going to say is it really depends on your use case.
Right.
So for me, the problem with the Remarkable, you can read books on it, but it's not a book reader. The Kindle is, it has a backlight. It's great for reading books and it adds the annotation and the note taking capability. What it lacks.
Annotate PDFs.
Yes, you can. But what it lacks is the Remarkable. It has an app and you can just see what you've written on the app. Remember, we went over this and you never got it working, but it works. Or on the desktop. But now they've added a subscription, which I'm not thrilled about. Mm-hmm. So if you want to like read legal briefs, annotate them and export that out, the Remarkable is obviously the choice. But for me, this is a book reader that allows me to do more with annotations and have a notebook as well. Because I sometimes need to sketch stuff out, especially when I'm doing my coding challenges. I need to sketch things out and stuff. And so I need a little notebook to do that with. And this is a good choice. Anyway,
cool.
I think it'll be an interesting review. But as a result, I'm buying more stuff to read. Like I'm going to buy Poverty on the Kindle. I did buy Poverty on the Kindle.
Don't buy Cory Doctorow's book on the Kindle because he will straight up come to
your house. Oh, you know better than
that's
that.
That's a good point. I have to go to.
You do not want to do that.
I can get an ebook and mail it to him, though. No, I can get the ebook and mail it to me.
But you can get it as a PDF what's the other format?
As an open like a ebook, EPUB, not Mobi, EPUB. Mr. Jeff Jarvis, do you have a number?
Sure, I do.
Sure, you do.
I have at least five or six of them to keep Spacey here.
Give us one.
I'm going to plug a really interesting discussion between Reid Hoffman and Trevor Noah. Reid's doing a podcast series of famous people because he's Reid Hoffman. They'll listen to him.
They'll come on his show.
And Trevor, I didn't know, has been doing work with Microsoft for years. He's very knowledgeable about AI. He was the voice of AI in Black Panther, which I didn't realize. And so they had a really interesting conversation about AI. I wanted to plug that. Google is trying to offload, I think is the proper verb, 1.4 million square feet of Bay Area office space. They just opened the new huge campus.
Holy cow.
That's a lot of office space down in the peninsula, mainly. So, geez.
They, you know, it's funny because right before COVID, all these companies were building out massive office space.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
Oh, this is sort of related. Well, San Jose is not really that close. Never mind. I was going to say
they were doing this huge San Jose project, which they put on.
So Austin, based on the census data, Austin hit the top 10 like largest cities based on census data out a couple of weeks ago.
Bad Everybody traffic. Left California to go Beating, to Texas.
They left San Jose because it knocked out San Jose.
Wow.
Just throwing that out there.
I'll mention one quick thing for AI. Back to the early part was that I saw one paper this week said that they're trying to solve the problem of facts in AI, which I don't think is solvable. I'm with large language models, which I don't think is solvable. But one thing they're doing, one experiment, was to have one AI cross-examine the other. And that yields some help, which is an interesting approach. That's it. I'm done.
Mr. Ant Pruitt.
With my pick of the week, I thought about Mr. Jarvis, but again, I there's another one that I wanted to share, and I said, no, I'm not going to torture him, so I wanted to go with this one, and it's Talking Science and Sports with Stephen A. Smith and Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, interesting.
On Stephen A. Smith's show. And it was a fabulous, fabulous conversation. Wasn't a lot of sports talk on it, but it was just really, really good information between these two gentlemen.
I'm really unhappy. I was supposed to tomorrow morning. I was supposed to go and sit down for a fireside with Neil deGrasse Tyson after at an AI event.
Oh.
And they canceled me because they wanted somebody who would speak to the AI CEOs there.
Well, why not you?
I don't know. I'm insulted.
Who did they pick instead? I'm curious.
I don't know.
Find out.
They said, we'll give you a ticket. Well, no, thank you.
That tells you there's a little something going on there.
Wow.
They must have realized you work with me, and they said, no, you can't be on.
It's all you.
We can't use him.
It's all you.
Yeah. Stephen A. Smith talks science.
Yep. Because I remember Mr. Jarvis met Stephen A. Smith or was in the same room with him recently at a conference.
Yes, it was.
Right?
Yes, it was. And I've been in the same room with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
And it was really good. I enjoyed it. It's about an hour long conversation.
Nice.
It's just
thank you.
Because I'm a TD for This Week in Space, and I joke with Mr. Rod Powell all the time about how I really don't give a crap about space, but I have a good time every
Jammer
Friday.
Jammer B is gonna pull
to
your
him
plug
and Tardik talk about space because they it's enlightening and they put it in a conversation good. That I can understand. That someone that's not super technical about the ins and outs of space and so forth.
I just recorded an episode for like 2 weeks from now on building LTE networks on the moon.
Ooh.
It was awesome.
Oh, wow. So daggum smart.
I was like, yeah.
You see? That's my slogan now. Know what's next.
See?
Turn on Twit.
Turn on Twit.
LTE on the moon. Turn on Stacy. But Stacy's part of it, right?
Yes.
Stacy on IoT.com. That's the website. The podcast is there with Kevin Toefel. Will that be part of the IoT cast or is it a separate?
Yeah. I'll let y'all know when it comes out because I'm really excited about it.
I can't wait to hear
Sorry.
It.
Sorry. I mean, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I'm like, networks on the moon.
She's pumped up.
The only reason any of us are here is to toot our own horn.
That's
no comment.
Speaking of which,
no comment.
Toot your own horn, Jeff Jarvis. He is the author of the Gutenberg Parenthesis, now available for Woo-hoo. Pre-order. If you go to gutenbergparenthesis.com, you can get your own copy from a variety of sources. You choose. Will there be a Kindle version? I bet there will.
Yes, there will be. They just told me that they're going to do an audiobook version. Yeah.
Oh, you're
Yay.
Kidding. Oh.
A little late, but yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
I'm hoping Jeff, I will read it.
Yeah, you should read it. Absolutely. You read your other audiobooks, right? What Would Google Do? Yeah. You did that. Yeah.
But, you know, I listen to audiobooks mainly at 1.75 to 2x, which is
Same.
A little slower than me, actually, in normal speed. So when I listen to an audiobook at regular speed, I just can't.
It's funny. I have to get used to listening at higher speed because you do that. Lisa does that. I take forever to read a book. I mean, it takes me a month to read an audiobook because I don't commute anymore. And so it has to be like bit here, bit there.
I'm at 1.25.
You should walk
somewhere near there.
I do walk. I'm
at 1.65.
Yeah, see, this
you're
is the thing.
Particular.
People who go through audiobooks don't listen at 1.0. But same with podcasts, by the way. A lot of people, when they listen to us in real time, think we're all drunk.
They're like,
yep.
Because we talk so slow.
Jeff is the director of the Town Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark. Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
Spoke to Craig. I saw Craig at an event for the school just last night.
Did he say strangle that LaPorte feller? Something face killer?
Ghost face killer is coming after me.
Ant Pruitt is, of course, the host of Hands On Photography. We see him there.
Yep.
He's, all, of course, all over the place at the Twit offices, including in our club where he is the manager, the community manager. And you can find his prints at antpruitt.com/prints.
And also, prints. Go get your colonoscopy, people.
Is that why you were out?
Yes.
Oh.
Go get your colonoscopy, people.
Not everybody.
Yeah. As a black man, I am quite concerned and wanted to make sure I get my my checkups regularly.
I just read an article that says TV doctors want you to get a checkup every year, but really it's a bad idea. So
I get a
colon cancer
checkup.
Rates are on the rise. Younger people, especially black and Latin American.
It used to be 50 years old was the time, but no.
I got one of those.
And prostate,
I got a sigmoidoscopy when I was, which is a little, let's not go into the details. It's less than a colonoscopy.
Guys, let's not talk about this.
He said my colon was clean as a whistle.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's good, right? Good. I think.
Yeah.
I can whistle.
But yeah.
My colon.
He can whistle from his butt. Yeah.
Anyway, ask your doctor. Skills. Don't just go out to the colonoscopy shop on the corner and say, I'm here. You should get a prescription. Make sure your doctor says to get one, obviously. But don't hide from it.
You want a colonoscopy?
Right. Don't hide from it.
Don't hide from it.
Yeah.
No. Get yourself same with prostate, folks. Take it from one who's had one.
Well, it's funny. I wanted a PSA. They do blood tests for prostate. I wanted a PSA. My doctor said, we don't do those anymore. And it turns out, this is a new trend in medicine of they don't want to do overdiagnosis. So he said, before I'll give you a PSA test, you have to go on the site and read about it, what the ups and the pros and cons are. Turns out it's not unusual to have a false positive and people have procedures they don't need, which are life threatening and there's no need for them.
Yeah.
So, now they're saying.
On the other hand, it's the same with mammograms, though.
Yeah,
You're either part of a statistical pool where they say, "Well, okay, you're one person,
right?"
And as one person, I wish I still had mine.
Yeah,
but when they took it out and they did the biopsy, they said it was the fast growing type.
Oh, that's good. You did it. By the way, go ahead and get a PSA, and my PSA was very good. So
excellent.
I don't know what that means, but they no longer. Wow, this is really TMI. They no longer do the turn your head and cough thing.
No.
They stopped doing that because for same reason. It turned out it wasn't useful.
Right.
And it was no fun for the doctor.
What was that even looking for?
That's been
no fun. They were looking for a large prostate, but apparently it was not worth
it. I thought it was for like hemorrhoids or something. Or
not looking for hemorrhoids. It's a little deeper than that.
I don't know my stuff.
Anyway. How far did he roll up his sleeve? That's the question. Ladies and gentlemen, we do this week in Google every Wednesday.
Up sleeves.
We'll be with you in a moment, Mr. Jarvis. I can't get it higher. We do this week in Google every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Jackhammers permitting. at live.twit.tv. Yeah. You can watch
that
us.
That laughter you just heard came from the club, which you better join.
It's a nervous laugh. Let me put it that way. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show available at twit.tv/twig. There's a YouTube channel. You know what, though? I really want to urge everybody to subscribe. It's the easiest thing to do. Find your favorite podcast application. Search for Twig or search for Twit. Subscribe to all the shows, get them automatically. That way you've got plenty of stuff to listen to anytime you've got a free moment We'll be glad to be here for you. So subscribe in your favorite podcast player. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you for putting up with us. Thank you, Stacy. We'll be back next
Thank
week
you, Stacy.
For another long, grueling episode of This Week in Google. Bye-bye.
If you love all things Android, well, I've got a show for you to check out. It's called All About Android, and I'll give you three guesses what we talk about. We talk about Android, the latest news, hardware, apps. We answer feedback. It's me, Jason Howell, Ron Richards, Wintuit Dao, and a whole cast of awesome characters talking about the operating system that we love. You can find All About Android at twit.tv/AAA.